author of Running, A Love Story, Jen Miller. Gardening tips from Chicago Botanic Gardens, Jacob Burns. And another installment of The Work with comedians Kelsey Huff and Soli Santos. And now, here's your host, a man who pulled a hamstring just thinking about running, Justin Kaufman.
It was a deep thought. There's no doubt about it, but yeah, pulled it right from the get-go. Just the thought of galloping, and I'm on the shelf. Good evening, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman here on The Download with you till 11 o'clock on 720 WGN. I hope you're having a great night. We got a great show lined up for you. Lots to talk about. Lots to talk about jobs. May was not good when it came to Illinois and layoffs. Projected warnings. I love this story because it's just, by law, employers have to give a 60-day notice when they're thinking about laying somebody off. And 1,300 warnings were put out by the state of Illinois in May. Not the government, but employers in the state of Illinois. That's not good. But one industry that's doing well in placing high-quality jobs is the healthcare industry. Why? We'll talk about what some are doing to invest in that area and to give jobs to people who need them the most. Also tonight, I'm excited about this. This has been something that I've wanted to do for a long time. Do you have questions like I do on why that godforsaken hydrangea in the front yard won't bloom? Like it goes up, then it goes down. I do everything I'm supposed to do. Sunlight, water, the whole thing. It like blooms one day and then looks like a 6-day-old corsage the next. Like, you know, when you, if I guess I never did this, but like the, if you were invited to homecoming and you got a corsage and you keep it, oh, this was such a great dance with Tommy. I'm going to keep it for like 6 months. That's how I feel like my hydrangea looks on the second day of watering. Anyway, the Chicago Botanic Gardens horticulturalist Jacob Burns is going to join us. He's going to take our calls, texts. We're essentially going to talk gardening. I'm feeling like this is my new religion, gardening. So I'm very excited about being able to talk to Jacob about what I need to know to be a better gardener and with my flowers and garden here in the city of Chicago. 312-981-7200. We'll talk about that coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Pete, are you a gardener?
Not really. We have a garden plot, you know, here in the city, but, you know, the wife takes care of it mostly. I just reap the rewards of the
tomato,
the vegetables.
A tomato here.
Yeah. Tomatoes,
zucchini.
We don't do because people steal them.
Really?
Yeah.
People steal tomatoes?
Yeah.
It's those kids.
It's those pesky kids.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The non-gangbanger kids. Like, there's the gangbanger kid who just, you know, they'll solve with a gun. But the non-gangbangers, it's a nice tomato.
It's not like an animal, a rodent comes up and eats it. You know, you'd see the remnants or whatever. But, yeah, it's like picked right off the vine.
Someone takes it for a salad.
or to throw at a car or whatever. Yeah.
That's terrible. Well, maybe what we'll do next time is we'll have Jacob from the Botanic Garden on and someone from Area 5 Headquarters Police so we can do how to garden and how to protect your garden.
But we have lovely flowers in there, so it looks nice.
Okay.
That's
all right.
I weed.
I believe you. I think that we got to get to the bottom of this tomato thief. Now I'm interested. I want to know. You know what? We'll do this later in the show. I'll just, you know, I want to ask a couple more questions about who you know, your neighbors, who's in some plots next door, who might have it out for you, you know, who might be taking your tomatoes, Pete. I don't like it. I don't like it one bit. It's like a Law and Order episode here. All right, we'll talk about gardening coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Also, my guest tonight at the big table, Jen Miller. She's the author of Running, A Love Story, 10 years, 5 marathons, and 1 life-changing sport. Talk with her about falling in love with running and how it essentially saved her life. So I'm not much of a runner, but I am fascinated by the sort of cult of personality around it. Like, there's just so much that goes into a runner. If you're a runner, everybody, you know, like you buy into being a runner, you know, from the marathons. I mean, it's an unbelievable explosion of numbers of people that are running. Used to be in Chicago, you know, 10 years ago, it'd be easy to get into the marathon. Now there's just millions of people involved, both from running and involved and watching and everything. So we'll talk more about the sort of all of that, all of the cultural around running, and talk to Jen about her story as well. Also coming up tonight, the worst. What's the worst? Running. No, that's not true. Soli Santos, who's one of our regulars here on the Download the Worst panel, and also Kelsey Huff. I'm very excited to have Kelsey. She's first time on the show. She's a longtime comic here in Chicago. I love her, and I'm glad she's going to be with us later on the Worst. 312-981-7200. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. This is The Download here on 720 WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Now it's time for the carryout. Let's get this thing started. Of course, this is our nightly segment where I read the newspaper, so you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Senator Mark Kirk made a huge move today and refused to endorse Donald Trump. Wow. Imagine a world in which a sitting senator rebukes his party in an election year. Amazing. You would think Senator Kirk would love Donald Trump just for the constant foot and mouth moments alone. Maybe Kirk's jealous. Gaffes used to be my thing. Now Donald, he just took it. Now I've got nothing. Speaker of the House Paul Ryan said that Trump's comments about the Mexican-American judge were the textbook definition of racism. But still, he'd take racism over Hillary Clinton. So there's that. And this just in, Trump said he's going to stop being racist. Okay? Are we good? Everybody good? Great. Hillary Clinton is the presumptive nominee for the Democrats after the Associated Press called the race for her yesterday. Now, all eyes on California, who will probably vote for Bernie, because Bernie seems like he would be the one candidate that would A, drive a VW bug, B, wear Birkenstocks, and C, skip showers. You know, save the environment. Governor Edgar's making the rounds here in the state of Illinois. You get the feeling the former Republican governor doesn't really like the current Republican governor. He said the state is in the worst fiscal shape in the last 50 years and that you don't solve it by calling your fellow lawmakers, quote unquote, corrupt. On the other hand, what do you call them? Leaders? Risk takers? Lawmakers? I don't think any of those apply. A Virginia school board is going to take on the White House's transgendered bathroom directive. They're going to take it right to the Supreme Court. They believe that nobody could tell them who cannot not go into the other bathroom. And really, are we that dumb that this wasn't the point in the first place? This whole fervor over bathrooms was really just about getting to the court, because states do this whenever a president tells them what to do. Essentially, the Supreme Court is the nation's dad. Mom, can I take the car to the mall? No. I'm going to ask Dad. A Florida alligator was found gnawing on a dead body. Florida authorities are scratching their heads trying to find out where the alligator got it. I'm not much of a detective, but I'm almost positive this was a scene in a Scorsese movie. The NFL Twitter account was hacked today. The hackers posted that Commissioner Roger Goodell had died. What happened to just hacking a Twitter account and spamming porn? We're past that now? Now we're just spamming fake obituaries? And come on, tell me what kind of gold watch you have. In weather, not as nice as yesterday. Too chilly. This weekend, though, it's supposed to be super, super hot. So remember today, Chicago. In sports, the Cubs won again, but at a price. Jorge Soler pulled a hammy. He's now on the DL. I guess better now than September. But again, the Cubs are so deep, they still have a killer lineup without Soler and Schwarber. Thank goodness for Javi Baez, eh? Even with the guys on the DL, you go Fowler, Hayward, Bryant, Rizzo, Zobrist, Russell, Baez, and Montero. That's amazing. And a prized prospect to boot, Albert Amora joins the squad tonight. Jeez. The Cubs are the first team in baseball to win 40 games. The Sox, on the other hand, they welcome the Nationals tonight. James Shields is going to go tomorrow. Carlos Rodon will be skipped on Thursday because he's got a sore neck. The Sox lose this series, and I'm removing them from the carryout. I said good day, White Sox. I said good day. And finally, today is VCR Day to celebrate the old VHS tapes and the technology used to watch them. In honor of the holiday, I'm not rewinding. Because, you know, I'm a risk taker, a leader, a lawmaker. That's the carryout for June 7, 2016. Hey, we've got some new gelato flavors, dark cherry, pistachio, and old English cheddar. More to come tonight. We'll talk about creating jobs in Illinois. Well, it's not coming from the government. It's coming from collaboration to bring more jobs to the healthcare industry. We'll talk about that coming up after the news here on The Download on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Coming up, we're going to talk jobs, and at 8 o'clock, the guest on the big table is Jen Miller. She wrote the book, Running a Love Story, 10 years, 5 marathons, and 1 life-changing sport. Rob Martier, are you a runner?
No.
It's very you took a moment to contemplate.
Yeah, no. You know, was never a big runner when I was in shape, and now that I'm out of shape, I'm certainly, right. Yeah.
CNN is saying that it's early in the race, but Hillary Clinton has a pretty big lead, 57% to 43%, with only 1% of the vote in. So
yeah, I
still a ways to go.
Having some computer issues up here when I logged into CNN, it punted me out. But on Fox, they're claiming right now, at least on Fox's website, that Hillary Clinton is the first woman nominee for her party.
Well, there you go. We'll pay attention to that. I know Donald Trump's going to talk. They said somewhere maybe in the 8 o'clock hour.
Mm-hmm.
I know we'll probably hear from Hillary and Bernie. We should take them tonight, right?
I think so.
I mean, it's interesting. We'll take the first couple minutes till Donald Trump just starts going. Hey, you know, and they will. I did The Apprentice. The Apprentice is a great show. I didn't want to do it anymore. They wanted it so much. They wanted to, every time he does an interview.
Number one in the ratings.
Number one.
It was like on NBC8. It was number one in the ratings. It was great. It was on the Ocho.
We asked you about your foreign policy. Well, you know, they wanted The Apprentice. They wanted it back. So great. I'm just waiting for a State of the Union.
I can't wait.
It's all about The Apprentice.
I cannot wait to see Trump and Clinton on the same stage. You have two candidates with so much baggage and are so disliked. Yeah. It's going to be fantastic.
Oh, I can't wait. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, my guest at the big table, author Jen Miller. Her book, Running, A Love Story, 10 Years, 5 Marathons, and 1 Life-Changing Sport. She talks about falling in love with running. She's run all over the country. She's here in Chicago. I don't think for anything but a book signing, but usually I've been following her Instagram. She usually will run where she promotes her book. So it'll be interesting to see where she ran today. Right? We'll see. She has great stories in it about running and some of the great marathons in this country, but also just about how running sort of keeps her sane. It's a good thing. So that's coming up at 8 o'clock. Right now, this week, community and corporate leaders alongside elected officials came together for a graduation. No, it wasn't for college or even high school. It was to recognize the first class of trainees from the Healthcare Workforce Collaborative. It's a new program from JP Morgan Chase and Advocate Healthcare to train workers for the healthcare industry. That industry is growing exponentially at a time when the headlines offer more gloom and doom. Analysts say that the healthcare industry will have a huge increase in available jobs by 2022. What is the healthcare industry and why is it growing so much? My guests in studio, Clayton Pryor, he's the director of workforce development at Advocate Healthcare, and Daniel Spray, who's the managing director of corporate responsibility at JP Morgan Chase Midwest Region. Gentlemen, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
All right, so let's talk about this. When I say the healthcare industry, what is the healthcare industry?
It is the industry of caring for people. So we provide a lot of services around the community and take care of people very well.
So we're talking about like nurses? What is that?
Sure. I mean, there are a lot of positions that are clinical and non-clinical. We're talking from the basic nursing assistant all the way through nurses.
Okay.
Clinical, we have contact center positions, phlebotomists, EKG techs, you name it.
So that area is growing. Hospitals and other places need jobs.
Absolutely. The industry is always evolving and care is a constant need. So absolutely. The delivery of care is actually changing. So we're going to more of an outpatient care network. So there's definitely a need here.
Well, that's good. You stole one of my questions. I was going to ask about, I mean, this is not necessarily, jobs that are in hospitals. These are jobs that go along with sort of the movement to move things more to managed care, to outpatient care, as you just mentioned.
Absolutely. There are a variety of outpatient acute care, so we have them all.
What do you do? Let me bring in Mr. Spray. Mr. Spray, when we talk about JP Morgan Chase, I don't think about healthcare industry. What's the interest of JP Morgan Chase in being a part of this collaborative?
So from a big picture standpoint, we're really interested in economic opportunity and economic mobility. We'll invest over $1 billion globally trying to improve people's economic mobility in the next 5 years.
Okay.
Workforce is a big part of that equation. And we continue to read in the papers, you probably have yourself, tens of thousands of jobs go unfilled in the Chicagoland area every year because somebody doesn't have the right certification, background, experience, training program to meet a position that employer has a definite need for. And mm-hmm. So what's the disconnect here between demand and supply? So we stepped into this, did a skills gap labor market study last year that identified healthcare and transportation, distribution, and logistics as the big growth workforce sector in the middle skill jobs.
And
space.
When I think of growing jobs, I mean, I think of municipalities or government to be able to do that. I mean, that's the sort of to invest in and to put money in so these industries will grow in the state of Illinois. Obviously, we've seen a lot of trouble with the budget stalemate and what's happening in Springfield. From a corporate side to come in from the for-profit sector, I mean, it besides the fact of just economic mobility, I mean, are you giving back? Is that part of it as well?
Yeah. I mean, the bottom line is we thrive in communities that thrive. And you really can't turn to government really across the globe anymore to solve all the problems. This is a space where we thought we had some expertise. We hear from customers and clients every day. We can't expand in Chicago. So maybe we're going to think about moving somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And just focusing on healthcare and transportation, distribution, and logistics, we will see 27,000 jobs a year come online just wow. in that space over the next 5 years, 14,000 in healthcare.
Mr. Pryor, where are we getting these workers? I mean, the idea that all these jobs are going to come available, who are you targeting to get into the healthcare industry?
Sure. For this particular program, we're targeting unemployed and underemployed individuals. So this workforce initiative is an employer-led, demand-driven initiative. So we're actually looking at the positions that we have at Advocate Healthcare and some of the other leading healthcare providers to ensure that we can connect people with tangible job opportunities.
Okay, so let's talk about the Healthcare Workforce Collaborative. What do you do? I mean, is it training? Is it essentially a course?
Absolutely. So we are targeting a lot of positions over the next 5 years. So we will basically help individuals gain the skills that are necessary to take on these jobs. So as he mentioned, there's kind of a skills gap in the middle skilled jobs. So we are connecting people with tangible opportunities to get the hard skills training. And we as Advocate are providing locations for the clinical education.
Okay, so what I saw in the press release that these were considered to be high quality jobs. What does that mean?
Well, basically, I mean, you have entry-level positions, you have middle-skilled jobs, and you have skills jobs. So we are working with individuals to get certifications and licensing so that they can get livable wage jobs, and that's what we're targeting. As individuals come into Advocate Healthcare and other providers, we're also providing them with support services so that they can access and maintain these jobs as well.
I mean, when you talk about a livable wage, I mean, it's hard to say, you know, throw out a number, but we've been seeing so much fight over minimum wage and being able to bring that up. I mean, are these salaried positions? Are these hourly positions? How do you see this kind of working out in the healthcare industry?
You know, they're really going to vary. I think that there are positions for everyone, and we have, again, some that are going to be entry-level, and we're going to have some that are middle skills as well. The demand is going to be very, apparent in a lot of different salary ranges, so to speak.
Okay.
I think the important thing is to get people start to think about a career pathway in healthcare. You know, becoming a CNA might lead to a nursing assistant, which might lead to a nurse down the road. Mm-hmm. You know, you might become a respiratory therapist. I mean, what are the stepping stones you take in your career to maybe end up with a two-year or four-year degree?
Because I would think, you know, my sort of, you know, layman's sort of approach to it is that healthcare industry equals nurse. I mean, that if I think about it, and I am very ignorant when it comes to the healthcare industry, but there have to be other jobs that are included in that.
Absolutely. As I said, we have clinical and non-clinical positions. We have phlebotomist, EKG techs. We have a contact care center. There are insurance verifiers. There are medical coders and billers. So there are a lot of positions. Outside of that, there are professional services positions. So if you think about a hospital, we have to run the building. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. there are a lot of positions that can be put into this program as well.
Here in Chicago, I mean, and in the area, do you see this, you know, when you're dealing with this kind of putting together this kind of workforce collaborative from the vantage point of JP Morgan Chase, do you want to invest in a city, in a state that has all this kind of gridlock? I mean, is there something that make you kind of question whether or not you should be putting money into a situation that right now doesn't have sort of a light at the end of the tunnel?
I mean, one of the great opportunities here is that the mayor's taken a leadership role to really revamp the city colleges and align each of them with a specific career sector. Malcolm X is going to be the healthcare college. They've just opened up a new campus just west in Loop that is fantastic if you've not been
there.
And so this is the reason why we're investing in healthcare, because there's such tremendous opportunity in the Chicagoland area. Malcolm X will be a partner in this program.
Absolutely.
So that's great. Yeah. Okay.
Just a little bit more about the program. We'll be working through community-based partners and community colleges, such as City Colleges of Chicago, to implement the training as well. So we have a lot of partners, and this is really a collaborative, so we have a lot of opportunity to get people connected to this program.
How do people find out about the program?
Absolutely. They can go to our website, which is advocategiving.org/workforce. So we have a lot of information about the program that they can access there.
Clayton Pryor is the Director of Workforce Development for Advocate Healthcare. Daniel Spray is the Managing Director of Corporate Responsibility for JPMorgan Chase Midwest Region. We're talking about the Healthcare Workforce Collaborative. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being my guest tonight.
Thank you for having us.
It's the download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman, talking jobs. We're talking Hometown Voices. We're going to Des Plaines for the next stop in the WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour presented by Allstate. Join me, Justin Kaufman, for a live broadcast of the download on Friday, June 17th. Man, that's coming up. From 7 to 11, Taste of Des Plaines. We'll help kick off this year's event where you'll find live entertainment, food, beverages, and activities for the whole family. Pete, I was interested in this because we were trying to figure out when we first, you know, said, let's do this. Let's do the Taste of Des Plaines, which I'm very excited about doing. I love like town festivals. I'm so excited
so
to be. And I love Des Plaines. So this is going to be great. It was funny because we started to look around to be like, okay, who could we get? Who's a big name from Des Plaines?
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of looked into the history of like, you know, who's the stars from Des Plaines.
Yeah.
And we were kind of drawing a blank. What the internet told us,
Sean Green,
the Jewish mm-hmm. Dodger.
Yeah,
that's all I remember. Right,
the other Jewish Dodger.
Yeah, he skipped a playoff run for Yom Kippur.
Yeah,
whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he skipped it because he's religious.
Yeah,
and I just remember that. That was like in the late '90s, maybe. So Sean Green,
Mr. Brady.
Mr. Brady as in the Brady
Robert
Bunch?
Reed.
Ah, got
mm-hmm.
it. Okay, I thought you were thinking, like, there's so many Bradys mm-hmm. in politics here mm-hmm. in Illinois. Captain Jill Morgenthaler, who mm-hmm. we've had on the show.
Yeah, she's great.
You know what? We'll get her out. I'd love to talk to her again. I could talk to when we had her in on about her book, which was about leading and about being a woman in the military mm-hmm. As an officer. It was fascinating. And we could have talked for 2 hours. And we just thought, so you know what? We'll get her out.
Yeah, I'd love to have her out.
Yeah, absolutely. She's wonderful. And then, so if you have any ideas of who we should get from that area, because I say you could probably do out. I mean, Des Plaines is such a great town, but it's surrounded by great towns, too.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody's, you know, from Mount Prospect or, I don't know, the other towns out in that area, Norwood Park, Edison Park, you know, and if there's any, I don't know, some, you know, people that you think from those areas.
Notable. Well, we should be talking to that night.
They'll drive a couple miles, right?
Yeah.
Come to Des Plaines.
It's right, as we know, it's right near the train station where we're going to be.
Parking and admission is free and just steps from the metro station, too. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about taking the metro train out and then come back. Although we get off at 11, but I think it still runs. Visit the events page at WGNradio.com for details. The WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour presented by Allstate Chicago's Own Good Hands. Coming up, Jen Miller. She's the author of Running, A Love Story. I'm very excited to talk to her. 9 o'clock hour, we're going to talk about gardening. This is a segment that on surface, I'd be like, gardening, I don't care. But I'm telling you, Pete, I have turned a leaf.
Let's see what
there you
did
go,
there.
Buddy. Thank you. No, I really, I mean, it's very spiritual, and it seems very productive. Although my stuff is mostly just flowers, like around the front yard. But I feel like it's very productive. Like, I feel like I'm getting something done. I feel like I'm becoming one with the earth. And then I also am really hard on myself when the stuff is not working out.
You go to where you bought your hydrangea.
Sethany, yeah.
You know, up near me. It like screws up Clark Street for miles, like on the weekend, because people are going
really?
In there buying plants. I mean, people love this kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. I went to another place, and I forget the name, but it was on Chicago and Damon
mm-hmm.
in Wicker Park. It's a great little spot right there. And the home, and you know, Home Depot too. Home Depot's got some really great stuff in, yeah, in the front. So I don't know. I just, I found myself, like, I dug up, you know, this place that I have. It's so interesting because whoever, or the people who owned it before, they put up like the, like almost like the most non-decorative plants you possibly could in the front.
Hmm.
Like the kind of thing, it almost looked like cactus. Not even cactus. It looked like thorns. There was nothing growing. And I thought maybe there was a, you know,
problem with the soil,
yeah,
or something.
And then I realized that that's the plant, and then I saw it at Home Depot. It was like $2. I'm like, oh, there you go. They probably staged it when we bought it, you know. It's like, get the cheap plant in there.
Yeah.
So I changed those up.
No, really?
Yeah, I changed them up. I dug them out, put more hedge-type stuff in front.
Got to get a picture.
I know. You know what? I probably have one. I have one. Maybe we could put it on the live blog. Yeah. What's the live blog? It's WGNradio.com?
Yeah.
I'll put it up. We'll put it up before we start at 9 o'clock. But Jacob Burns from Chicago Botanic Gardens coming in, 312-981-7200. And at 10 o'clock tonight, the worst, Kelsey Huff, Soli Santos, 312-981-7200. Got great stuff to give away for your worsts. You know what's the worst, Pete?
Hmm.
Going to see your kid's dance recital.
Yeah. Why is that bad?
And having parents, other parents, show up late and decide that the time to find a seat in the packed auditorium is while your kid's dancing.
Oh.
I was like, it's so funny, Pete, now that we have the worst, it's so great, because I was seething. So essentially, you know, it was Hubbard Street Dance, and my kid is in it, and he had a jazz dance performance, and he was over there for a couple months.
Yeah, you know, learning the thing. Stuff, this is the big
spending my money. and it was, you know, I was excited because this is a showcase, and they do it at the Whitney Young Auditorium, which is right by the house. And I was like, oh, I was excited, and it was packed, 500 parents, because what they do is they do like 20 classes in a row. They all get one song, you know, and they dance to one song. So you're there, and they give you a bunch at the beginning of it. They give you all these things you can't do. All right, turn your cell phone off. Don't do this. Don't leave. Don't, you know, it's disrespectful to the other kids. So you're pretty much stuck there for an hour and a half to watch your kid for 2 minutes and then everybody else's kid. But you're like, all right. So he was on fourth or fifth. And I'm telling you, man, like right when the lights went out on the third one and everyone clapped, you saw the bodies start to move. They were late. And the auditorium was filled, so there's no seats. So they get about halfway up the riser. The lights come up. You know, all the kids are in place to start their jazz routine. And they're looking around like, are there two over there? Are there three over there? And they're blocking.
Infuriating.
They're blocking my view.
Did anybody say anything?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of kerfuffle. Like, hey, you know, because everyone gets real antsy because it's only 3 minutes. It's not like you can rewind it.
Yeah.
It's not like we're taping it. I'm not the parent that's got the iPad that's like, I won't look at it now. I'll look at it later. I'm going to tape this. They said no video.
Yeah.
So you're like, this is it. This is the moment.
Yeah.
And these people are walking.
And they probably were coming up right next. They wanted to, you know, they were scamming, skipping the early ones and coming so they didn't have to stay for the whole thing.
Probably.
Too.
The lack of respect and the lack of decorum. And not only that, you know, if you're the dance company and you're going to do a list of 10 things on the microphone that I can't do as a parent in the audience, maybe formalize what you're going to say to the people who are late.
Yeah.
Because the Joffrey Ballet ain't letting you in 20 minutes late. You know, the most theaters in town are not letting you in 25 minutes late.
Yeah.
You know, to disturb everybody else. And in this case, I'm not there. It's not Bon Jovi, man. It's not like I don't like this new song off the record, so I'll wait 1 second.
Yeah.
It's my kid. Everybody in the room is there for 3 minutes to watch their kid dance. You should not be able to come in late.
I'd have a hard time not.
Well, I mean, what's worse?
Get a viral video of Kaufman going nuts at the school play.
An altercation while the next kids are dancing. You know, so now the fight is blocking the modern dance kids.
Yeah, I guess you.
There's nothing you could do, man. Well. But I was furious, and I was seething, and I'm glad. I wish I had an outlet. I wish I had an outlet to talk about this on a weekly segment. It's a download here on WGN Radio. We'll keep you updated. Secretary Clinton will speak at some point tonight. I'm not sure. They had a sort of screenshot when Donald Trump was talking. They showed the podium at her headquarters. So We'll get you to Secretary Clinton when she speaks, which will probably be after Donald Trump. So I'm saying like 11:30, 12. He's right now in his The Apprentice was a great show. They wanted me to come back. That's my favorite Donald Trump. And this campaign is how he always works the fact in that he had a successful TV show. So we'll give you Hillary Clinton when she gets to the podium. Well, my guest tonight at the big table hails from New Jersey. She's a writer who's appeared in the New York Times, Self, Women's Day, and Runner's World, just to name a few. But you know what? For our conversation tonight, maybe I won't call her a writer. Maybe I'll just call her a runner. Jen Miller is the author of the new book, Running, A Love Story, 10 Years, 5 Marathons, and 1 Life-Changing Sport. Miller penned the story about falling in love with running, all kinds of running, although less on the treadmill.
Ugh, treadmill.
5Ks, 10Ks, half marathons, full marathons. Jen Miller's run them all. And through it all, she learned lessons about the important things in life, like happiness, health, and home. Jen Miller, welcome to the big table tonight.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for having me.
You've got some stuff in town I should mention, too. You're going to be at Universal Soul in Lakeview. That's tomorrow night at 6:30. Where mm-hmm. I love this. There's actually a book reading and signing at 7:30, but you tell people to get there at 6:30, and you guys do essentially a fun run around the neighborhood.
Yeah, I mean, it's a book about running, so it seems to be a good idea to go on a run. So we're going to run a very easy 3 mile, whatever your pace. I'm not very fast. I'm a middle-of-the-pack runner, so if you want to come run 11-minute miles with me, that's cool. If you want to run a 5-minute mile, that's great. If you want to run a 4-minute mile, maybe you should be getting ready for the Olympics. But sure. We're going to do an easy run, and then there's going to be beers and me talking, and it'll be great. If you don't want to run, then come out at 7:30.
Where does your love of running come from? Because, you know, I was surprised to read in this book that you didn't start with running. That you really didn't think about until, I guess, after college.
Yeah. Running was punishment. If you were like me and played 1,000 sports as a kid, you ran when you did something wrong or when the team lost. So I played soccer and I was captain of my high school softball team. So if we made mistakes, we'd have to run a lap around the field and then do 10 push-ups and 10 sit-ups. So running was terrible, and New Jersey can be incredibly hot in the summer. So my dad would make me run to condition, quote-unquote, which is what it was called, which is what boxers did. And I hated every second of it. And I didn't start running until I was in my early 20s. And I was a baby freelance writer. And a magazine paid me $750 to train for a 5K, which was, you know, seems like, oh, what a big deal now. But back in 2006, that was kind of an odd thing to do.
Right. And talk about that. Because, you know, you learned a lot about training, but you also learned about running. I mean, for me, running is one of those things that, you know, I've always had friends and people that I look up to and respect who, you know, just you post on Facebook, yeah, 5 miles, you know, this, that, and the other. And I'm always like, I don't know you. Who are you?
I don't even know me sometimes.
I want to get there. I want to feel that euphoria when it comes to around running. So talk about what you learned about it when you started that assignment.
Well, when I first started, I mean, as kids, we run. Kids run everywhere. And, you know, we run in sport and you run when, you know, you want to catch the green light as I am staring out at downtown Chicago. But when you do it to just run, it's this very weird thing. You're hurtling your body forward and stopping abruptly. So I think the stat that I have, and I researched it for the book, was you're throwing three mm-hmm. times your body weight into the ground and it's jumping back out to you. So anything that's not strapped down by, you know, compression shorts or a sports bra, you know, goes flying. And I have a lot of hair. So if it's not braided, it just goes everywhere. And it was a very odd feeling to do it at a slow enough pace that it was sustained. So instead of going out and trying to sprint, for the purpose of the story, I was given a running coach, online running coach, which at the time, again, it's 2006. I don't think I had Wi-Fi in my apartment at the time. You know, he told me, you got to slow down. You got to just don't sprint out. Take your time. And that was the mantra that I kept in my head when I started, was go slow, go mm-hmm. slow. And, you know, I've been running for 10 years as of this month, and sometimes I still have to tell myself to go slow, go slow, because a lot of the training for a lot of these runs are done at an easy pace. And it's not the sprinting, or this morning I was doing hill repeats, that where that sort of magic comes in. It's those long, slow, steady miles. And it's, you know, until I got past 5 miles, I didn't know what it was. And it took a lot of it didn't catch right away, I guess, right, is what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, you call it in the book, you call it running is controlled falling.
Yes.
I love that.
And it's terrifying. I'm so, you know, and it's funny. I wrote in the book about how scared I was to fall. And I fell last year pretty hard in trail running, and I'm still scared of falling. But you know, you can fall crossing the street. I had a friend who broke her ankle just walking around New York City. So right. Why not do something fun when you do something stupid?
We're talking with Jen Miller. She's the author of Running a Love Story, 10 years, 5 marathons and 1 life-changing sport. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation. What I want to get at is, I mean, running is one thing and falling in love with it is another. And what it does for you. I mean, because, you know, running, I always find it is this experience where you're alone with your thoughts. Mm-hmm. And in that, and that's sort of what gets you sort of unwind in this book, mm-hmm, is about the sort of thoughts and your how you run differently and considering what relationships you're in, things like that. So we'll talk more with Jen Miller here on The Download when we return. Stay with us. It's The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, Jen Miller. Her book, Running, A Love Story, 10 Years, 5 Marathons, and 1 Life-Changing Sport. You're also a freelance journalist, and you cover the industry that is running.
I do.
So you're not only writing memoirs about your love of running, but you're covering...
Who cares about me?
So let's talk about... I mean, it really has exploded in the last, it seems like, decade. More and more Americans are getting into the sport, I would say the leisure and sport of running.
Yeah, we went through what's become known as the second running boom in 2008. So the first one was back in the 70s when Americans started running in the Olympics and getting noticed. In 2008, the recession happened, and a lot of people started running then for the same reason. One of the same reasons that I did was control. You have this thing that is a stress relief and control. So the Broad Street Run in Philadelphia is a 10-mile race. It became the sixth largest race in the country. And I believe from 1 year to the next, registration shot up by 67%, wow, which where else do you get that kind of growth? And I used to write a running column for the Philadelphia Inquirer, and I talked to the race director. I said, why? And he said, what was going on then? You know, I'm a freelance journalist, and I lost half my clients. And I just bought a house, and then I couldn't afford it. So I started running. Because it was one of those things that you can go out and do. It is still for me. I did it this morning, where you can go out and I don't always run with my phone. I'm not going to get a phone call or a text. Even if I have my phone, I'm not going to pay attention to it and just be. And just when I trained for my first 10-mile race, I would go run more than 5 miles. And that was when things sort of blanked away. And a lot of things had gone on at that time. The boyfriend at the time, mm-hmm, very bad alcoholic codependent relationship ended by him meeting somebody else, though he told me he'd keep me in the top 8 of his MySpace friends. And then my grand,
which, you know, that's a pretty good deal.
You know, I declined. Facebook told me that the other day, you might know this person.
Oh, no,
I think
that's
I do.
The worst, right?
Yeah. And then my grandfather died, and I'm part of a very large Italian Catholic family. So that was traumatic. And then the recession hit and all these things sort of slammed into me at the same time. And it, you know, I started running more, and a lot of people did the same. So, you know, I'm glad that I had that experience of doing that first 5K in 2006 and having a coach to tell me what to do. And then it sort of became something I really hung on to, and I still do. It's been 10 years.
Let's talk more about that control, because, you know, I always think about it. And when I run, it almost feels like, you know, for the first 2 minutes, I'm like, I'm doing it. Like that's the first thing. I'm like, I can't believe I'm doing this. What's that pain? Oh, is that? Oh, there it is. Something's wrong with my knee. Like, I'm just giving you the thought process of my first 5 minutes.
You need to go to Universal Soul and get fitted for new shoes.
Okay, well, I'll do that. But I mean, there's something about the human brain and releasing endorphins and the idea of I guess just spending time with yourself that after a certain amount of time you get past the sort of, you know, small time stuff, and you start to have more sort of independent thought about your community, about your home, things that you don't necessarily get the chance to do in other places.
Yeah, it was a way to allow my brain to unknot. I wrote a lot of the book while running, and when I was writing the book, I would take my phone with me when I usually wouldn't, and these ideas and lines would, and memories even would come back to me while I was running, and I equate it to that sort of twilight between being awake and asleep, and you're in that weird zone.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wrote a story that was recently published in the New York Times called The Breakup Marathon, and I had interviewed people who went through a divorce, and then this one gentleman that I interviewed 11 times tried to qualify for the Boston Marathon, got divorced. He did it on the 12th try. So there is research that physical activity affects the neuroplasticity in your brain and can help you get over trauma. Now, a divorce, as the case was here, might seem like a big trauma, but the researcher I talked to said that if you've reached the point of divorce, you've been living a life of mini traumas for possibly years. So it's not that even if you get to the point of divorce and say, oh, it's amicable, it's fine, mm-hmm. you've probably been living through this. So take my relationship that had been with an alcoholic. I have been living a year and a half of a series of mini traumas. So to go out and exercise, neuroplasticity helps you. If you improve that in your brain rewires itself into a better form, and that's what running's become.
It's fascinating. And okay, so we'll take a break here for the news. And I see that Hillary Clinton, they're showing her stage. So we'll get an update on Secretary Clinton's speech that she'll be making sometime very soon here. But when we come back, let's talk about the Chicago Marathon.
Sure.
Because it plays a role in this
book.
It does. It's a good example of you know, you talk about sort of unwinding and reconnecting with your brain. But it also, I mean, there is when you have situations that are in your personal life, they can get in the way of the focus of trying to get something done and accomplishing something. And that sort of is all kind of centers around the Chicago Marathon. We're talking with Jen Miller. She's a journalist who wrote the book Running, A Love Story, 10 Years, 5 Marathons, and 1 Life-Changing Sport. We'll continue our conversation here at the Big Table. Just a minute. Stay with us. Yes, a download here on WGN Radio. We're waiting for Secretary Clinton to take the stage. Her headquarters, I believe, where's she at? She's in Brooklyn. No one can go, I guess, no one can go to Jersey or to...
She's going to Brooklyn because I'll be there on Sunday doing another event. That's why
she's
there.
We are here for Jen Miller.
Yes.
She's
Hey, Hillary.
Right now, everything is set for the candidate to come up on stage. And when she comes up on stage, we will play some of her speech. Right now, we're talking with Jen Miller, author of the book Running, A Love Story, 10 Years, 5 Marathons, and 1 Life-Changing Sport. You know, a memoir, if you will, about your life and how running has changed it and mm-hmm. has also been there for the good and the bad.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about pain.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of, I mean, people who are listening to this, me included, you know, I'm not much of a runner. And one of the things that stops me from doing it in any sort of regular, consistent basis is pain. Talk about pain threshold and what goes into being a runner.
Well, I have 6 toenails, although they don't actually hurt when they fall off. Do you want to see? No, I'm just kidding.
Many listeners are like, exactly. Okay, now I know where we're at.
Well, let me talk about my last marathon, which was on May 1st. New Jersey Marathon, which if you've read the book or read the book, the 2013 New Jersey Marathon is a big part of the book. So I went back to run it again. And I went into it in less than ideal circumstances. The book came out March 22nd, and I went on a book tour while supposedly training for the end of this marathon and doing my most training, which is about 55, 57 miles a week. So that was a lot. I got sick at my Boston event, and then I ran with a shoe tied too tight and hurt my foot. And then I had a nightmare so vivid that I bashed my head against my headboard and gave myself a concussion.
Jeez.
So, pain. And then the night before the race, the manager of the restaurant where we ate stepped on the bad foot. So I had a couple choices going into the race, which was don't run, run the half, or see how it goes. And the other option was run in regular socks or run in compression socks, knowing that if I ran in compression socks, I'd lose a lot of toenails. And it became what are your goals? So I wore the compression socks and I ran the whole marathon.
What were your goals? The goals were like, above all else, I want to finish this marathon.
I wanted to finish that marathon strong. I had hoped to set a new PR, which is a personal record, and I did. But dealing with the pain in that situation was trying to get past it, knowing it would be over soon. So after the race, I had giant blisters on my feet. And my friend who was helping me, it was a cold race and I was sort of stiff after and trying to get out of the wet running clothes and into the clothes to go drinking in. said, how did you run like that? And I'm like, I didn't even think about it. Because once you run a lot and you've run a lot of races, and I've been running races for 10 years now, you get used to that race pain.
Yeah.
It's hard sometimes for runners to differentiate between race pain or situation pain or soreness and real injury. That's the question I get asked the most, is how do I know if I'm hurt? How do I know if I need to rest? And the best I can say is, if you are in acute pain, go get help. Otherwise, it's over time that you get used to it. So there's good pain. So I ran hill repeats this morning, and my legs hurt when I got on the plane today. But I
that's
know
good pain.
That's good pain. Right. It's my legs are getting stronger as I prepare for a trail run. My first big running injury was something called dead butt syndrome. Yes, that's what it's called. But it's actually called gluteus medius tendinosus, which was an overuse injury. And it felt like an ice pick was being driven into my hip. And it was a pain that didn't go away. So sometimes injuries like that happen to people and they stop running. And I don't blame you. That's totally fine. My mom is a runner now, but she prefers triathlons because she likes the biking and the swimming, which is fine.
But this is all, I mean, what I find fascinating about it is this is very, I don't know what you call marathon training and running, but it's competitive in the way that it's not necessarily for fitness, and it's not to lose weight in any form. It's not necessarily, I've heard you say exercise, and you say exercise in the book, but it does seem to be the elevated form of running, not necessarily something someone's doing to stay in shape or to lose weight.
Right. I'm typically 5 to 10 pounds lighter when I'm not training for a marathon, because the food, I mean, you're hungry all the time. And you talk about something called runger. After I ran the New Jersey Marathon and I took a month off because my legs were shot, it's like having to learn how to eat again, and you don't need all this food.
You know, so what do you mean? Are you doing like 2 dinners a night? That kind
yeah,
of stuff?
Constantly. You're just kind of grazing all the time. And I have a guide coming out in the New York Times this summer about nutrition and running, in which I stopped eating a lot of fake foods and more real foods and fats and all that sort of stuff. But we don't have to talk about that.
Do you worry at all about, as a runner, as someone who is, I don't say this in a bad way, but it is obsessive in the way that you are constantly in the world of running and you're constantly looking for the next race. Do you worry about any sort of unhealthy habits when you do have an injury, or things that just don't seem like it's necessarily humanly possible to do?
Well, I think over time I've learned when to pull back. So my first injury was because I tried to train for my first marathon and qualify for Boston at the same time without ever having run a marathon, and the training, I overtrained. So
that's a thing, right?
Right. It's definitely a thing. After the 2013 New Jersey Marathon, I had a foot injury, which, not a spoiler of the book, and I was in an air cast for 3 months. If I had kept running, I would have been a stress fracture, which would have been a lot worse. So over time, I realized when to stop. So in 2014, I ran 2 marathons in 1 year and realized that was way too much. So I only do 1 road marathon a year, which, sorry guys, means I'm probably not coming back to the Chicago Marathon anytime soon.
Well, the Chicago Marathon plays a role. It kind of starts in the book. It really is the peak of the book. I mean, this is towards the end. You talk about the Chicago Marathon and the experience of running that marathon, because what was happening to you when you lived in Philadelphia, you were in a relationship that wasn't working and you were thinking about getting out, and it had an effect on how you trained and how you sort of got yourself mentally prepared for Chicago. So what's it like to be back in Chicago right now, and tell us this story?
Well, the 2012 Chicago Marathon was my second full marathon. My first had been Philadelphia the fall before. And I had trained for that with a person I was living with. And by the time the Chicago Marathon training rolled around, things weren't going well. And it was at the point in a relationship where neither one of us could really say it was over and we should probably move on, because that's hard. I mean, even if a relationship is broken down to the point that you're not totally even talking to each other sometimes, that's hard, because you love that person at some point. And that person, you know, he still is a friend of mine. So, hey, he's probably not listening, but it's hard to separate your life, because you live together and your books are mixed up and your CDs are mixed up and all that sort of stuff. And our training didn't really match. I have a real problem training in the heat. And Philadelphia in the summer is very hot. So I did not train with him for that race. It was the first time. Like, we had trained together for the first one, not this one. I would go to my mother's house in southern New Jersey and run there because it was a little bit cooler and I could start running at 5 o'clock in the morning and not worry about the drunks from the after hour bars coming after me, that sort of thing. And by the time we got to Chicago, training hadn't gone well because I felt like my life was falling apart, my personal life at least, not my work life. And I came to this city, this beautiful city, and it was a beautiful race day. It wasn't hot. Weather was perfect. And I just crumbled. And I don't remember a lot from what happened. And I even wrote on my personal blog, a blog post, a race report, and I read it over as I was writing the book. And I said, I don't remember any of this stuff. Just because I think it was such a bad experience for me. The race is fantastic. It's probably the most organized race I've ever run outside of the New York City Marathon, with easier logistics than the New York City Marathon. And I came back to Chicago 2 years later for a work trip, and I made sure to run to the finish line and run it over and over and over again to say, you know, the marathon was bad, but this is a great city. And, you know, running can be bad sometimes if it gets, you know, you try to do too much when there's too much going on, but it can be great
for
you
too. A lot of this book is about, you know, accomplishing or getting over things. You know, the New Jersey Marathon, also the Ocean Drive. Do you think at all about a future where you would come back and run the Chicago Marathon just to put a cap on that?
I it's a good idea. I cannot train in the summer anymore. I ran the 2014 New York City Marathon because it's New York. You know, it's New York City Marathon. But I have really bad eczema, for anybody who knows what that is, and it's bad when it's humid out. So I went into the New York City Marathon, even though it was in November, I had an outbreak from running in the heat, and it was all across my body. Hmm. And it's, you know, it might sound like it's just a rash. It's so painful, and it got infected, and it was all steroids and drugs and not the fun kind. So.
Okay, Jen.
Sorry.
All right.
Talk about pain. Anyway, I would like to run the Soldier Field 10-miler.
Okay.
Or the Shamrock Shuffle.
And on another great run here in Chicago.
Sorry, marathon, but I encourage
that's okay,
people.
That's okay. But
fall marathon. It's a great marathon.
But the idea of coming back to Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm here for a running conference.
The one thing that and the one thing you mentioned just in the last answer, just about the idea of running and the drunks from the bars kind of coming after you. You know, you mentioned in this book, and it's something that I think a lot of men who run don't understand. But there's a lot of harassment. And just overall nasty behavior, catcalls essentially,
yeah.
When women run.
And,
you run
and
during
worse
the day.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. Talk about the, because you write about some of the experiences in this book, and they're hard. They feel like fiction, but they're not.
No, they're not. I run a lot in the middle of the day, not in the summer, just because I work for myself and I like to run before lunch. And in a short span of when I was in Philadelphia, I had my breast grabbed when I was running. I had a man chase me and say all sorts of bad things. That doesn't even get into what people just scream and yell at you. And the last straw really was someone in a city-labeled car said something to me about the way my butt looked in my pants. And I was like, that's it, I'm done. But that it's not just the Philadelphia problem. I was running in my little town in New Jersey, and a guy from a Michelob Ultra truck felt he had something to say. And it's, you know, a lot of the stories that I've read, and I refuse to write this story. Somebody asked me to about, well, how can women stay safe? Like, do they run in pairs? And I said, well, women can stay safe if guys stop doing this. So there was an incident where two guys in the delivery truck said something horrible to me, and my path crossed them later when they were making a delivery and whatever was in that truck. And I made sure to tell their boss foreman exactly what they said to me. You know what? They were scared. They were scared because they're not used to people confronting them, or they just say,
yeah,
it.
Right.
Think it's nothing.
They think
like,
it's
get
anonymous.
Away with it. Right.
So yeah, right.
And I wrote about it for Runner's World, and because I had written something about how this is part of rape culture and blaming women for what pants they wear. And a woman wrote me a very nasty email and called me a whore. So we started calling my pants my whore pants. Hashtag whore pants. If you look this up on Twitter and Instagram, it's really a thing. And what it led to was, it was sort of funny and jokey, but led to some conversations about, this happens, we don't talk about it. Sometimes we don't talk about it because people brush it off as nothing, or we're so angry about it happening all the time and not being able to do something. So what it actually did was, men started realizing that, oh, hey, maybe I shouldn't honk at a female runner. It's not, she doesn't see it as encouragement. She sees it as a threat. Some people who joined in our Twitter chat about that said women need to respect men, and I don't know how that fit in with it, but okay, whatever. But the more conscious we are of it, and if,
yeah,
you know, if I get yelled at, please don't ask me what I was wearing. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. Even if they are my electric purple pants that I got for $10 from the Nike outlet in Atlantic City.
you know, this book is very thoughtful. It is a, it's really a story that's not just about learning to run and to, you know, to train. And I mean, there's such great tips in here for runners and things of that nature. But it is the story of your life in a way. Was it difficult? I mean, was it, I don't want to say was it difficult, but what was the takeaway for you now that you finished this memoir that's essentially about your life in running? I mean, what are we, what's the future for you? But also, you know, when you reflect back on how people are reacting to it, what's your thought?
Well, I went to therapy when I was done. Because there's a lot of stuff in there.
There is a lot.
And I had to reexamine some things that I didn't want to look at again. I think what the kids would call it today is adulting, becoming an adult. But I became an adult through a pretty traumatic time. And I was thinking about this after I ran this last marathon of, you know, my original goal was to break 4 hours. And so many things happened that that wasn't possible. And even in the race, you know, the foot and the concussion, and I had to stop to use the bathroom 3 times. And I stopped thinking about what would have happened if nothing went wrong. Like, what if it was the perfect day? And what if I hadn't had the concussion? And what if I hadn't gotten sick? And thought instead of what I managed to do with the situation. So I think that's what this book is about. Not really regretting what happened, because, you know, I've read through this and I felt I beat myself up a lot for allowing these things to happen. But I think it's more of this stuff happened, life happened, but it ended up pretty great anyway.
You didn't run from it, you ran alongside it.
I did. There you go.
There you go.
We're going to put that on the back of the next edition.
Jen Miller is the author of Running, A Love Story, 10 Years, 5 Marathons, and 1 Life-Changing Sport. She is going to be speaking at Universal Soul in Lakeview at 7:30. She's also doing a fun run at 6:30. So if you want to go out, this would be tomorrow night, 6:30. You could do a short group run, and then at 7:30 she's doing the reading and the beers.
And the free beers.
And the beers.
Let's
and you're, and also
beers.
You're in town for the running and fitness event for women, which is also the conference here in Chicago this week.
Yes.
Jen Miller, thanks so much for being my
Thank
guest
you for
tonight.
Having me.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're waiting for Secretary Clinton to speak at her headquarters in Brooklyn, New York. New York! Donald Trump already spoke tonight after his victory, and in, I believe in, I guess it would be in New Jersey. And all the other primaries of states are closing now. So we're, CNN has a just a screenshot of the podium for like an hour. Scroll of all the numbers over on the side. They keep, I think they got Senator Schumer on right now and Jake Tapper. Real small, but just the podium. The podium, Hillary Clinton's podium is the star of CNN's hour here as we wait for her to get on stage. But that was great. I really enjoyed that conversation with Jen Miller. I'm not a runner, you know, but there's something about, you know, I, you know, like we hear it all the time when you exercise or you get on a treadmill, you know, this helps with stress and things like that.
Yeah.
It just sounds like, you know, that Jen has found a way to manage her stress, and not only that, but unlock a part of her brain that deals with the many traumas that happen in all of our lives, everyone who's listening.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a runner, man. I'm just not my thing. I feel like I'm a little too top-heavy. Like, I have really skinny legs, and I feel like right off the bat, I'm like, oh, all right, man. Like, the shins start hurting, and I'm like, it's me. I also have, like, this thing since I was a kid where my feet kind of go inward. So it's almost like the opposite of like bow-legged. It's like almost like my feet kind of like gravitate to the center. So I'm just not a runner.
No, but I run. I do my Orange Theory Fitness.
Oh, right,
I run on
right,
the treadmill.
Right.
I run. I ran a marathon. Vowed never to do it again. but when you talk about running culture, what I always get irritated with. When I see, like, when you see a runner like run down the street, you know, he's just in his shorts or shirt, whatever, it's fine. But then you have these people that are like way into it. They have, you know, they have like bandages all over their body. They have the straw
that's
something that, you know, sticking out of their back that they can drink out of. They have belts all over their place for, you know, things. And I was like, that's a lot.
Yeah,
that's too many accessories.
They're not an accessory.
Fitbits.
Yeah, right. You know, it's their whole body is filled with accessories.
I say if you know, running or long distances and training for long distances unlocks potential in our brains. I say you, me, and Martyr, we get a group going.
Yeah,
and we destroy this summer. We start building up 2 mile, 5 mile. We go up Mount Baldy. We climb that thing. We're everywhere. We hit the we get you know the magazines to put us on the front cover because we're just running like fiends. Runner's World will do a big thing on us. Next thing you know, we're up front at the marathon. We'll have costumes. Download costumes. We'll dress, but we'll do much better than anyone thought we would. And by the three quarters of the marathon, they'll be like, download Rob, beat Justin. And then we'll end that thing, and it'll be us in like a Kenyan. And we'll be neck and neck.
Only if we can slap the 26.2 bumper stickers on our car afterward.
That's horrible.
Because there's nothing more pretentious than that.
That's the worst.
No, actually, the only thing more pretentious than the 26.2 is the 13.1. You couldn't finish the damn thing? You can only do half?
We should do like 2.6 fun run.
And believe me, they are prevalent at all the Whole Foods across the North Shore.
Wow. No, I'm going to, you know what? We should do a black market. Let's do black market bumper stickers. So if you didn't run it, but you want a 26.2, we can get you one. Just, you know what? We know a guy. We know a couple guys. We know Jen Miller. She'll get it for us.
We've been talking about running the, there's like two half marathons, because I don't think the marathon is good for you. I think it's bad.
It doesn't sound good for you. Just six toenails.
Yeah. A lot of issues there. And then, but. So we're like, oh yeah, let's run the one in the fall. You know, we can work our way up, you know, to doing it. And then we went to the pages, you know, $95. I'm like, $95 to run a race?
Eh. My pain is worth $95. Yeah. I'm not doing that.
No,
$95.
I mean, you get a $30 T-shirt, I guess.
Do they give you a T-shirt? Like at least when you sign in, you get a T-shirt.
Yeah, but then usually you never go pick it up because there's too many people hanging around.
If I'm subjecting my body to $95 of abuse, it's going to be at a bar. Period.
That's right.
We're on to something. Bar marathons. Marathon shots. We'll figure this out. All right. We'll take a break. Hopefully Hillary Clinton will be up on stage when we return. And then coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, we'll shift from running to gardening. What a show. This is a very, like, outdoorsy show. Chicago Botanic Garden will be here. We'll take your calls and texts. Your issues with gardening, flowers, and food, 312-981-7200. Let's get the lines lined up now. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're standing by for Secretary Hillary Clinton to speak. The podium's getting great ratings on CNN. It's just the podium. They have completely moved all the pundits to the side, and half of the screen is the podium. And Secretary Clinton has not been on stage now for 45 minutes of this podium. So great ratings. The podium wins. All right. Well, I've been excited for this segment for the past few weeks. I found some spirituality when it comes to gardening. I don't know what it is, but there's something about picking, planting, and maintaining flowers that's just, you know what, that I'm finding good for the soul. Jen Miller may run, but I think I may plant. And yet, I'm perplexed at these things we call plants. One day they're beautiful, the next, they're like a droopy, dried up thing that is no longer what I bought. And then I realize, I contemplate my own mortality, and I recognize that maybe I'm not a good parent. Like everything about, maybe it's me. Maybe the problem's me. And then I'm like, no, maybe it's this soil. Or maybe it's the plant. I find myself blaming everybody. And I know I'm not alone. It's that time of year for Chicagoans to be obsessed with flowers and gardens. So to help me and others like me, the Chicago Botanic Gardens' Jacob Burns is here. He's a curator of perennials, and he's here to answer questions and dish out advice. Jacob, thanks for being here, man.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
I hope that I don't sound too whiny and completely freakish about this, but I mean, I'm new to the game. I've never really had a green thumb before, so it's really exciting and kind of nerve-wracking at the same time.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, when you go into the store, there's so many different options, and you could fail easily if you buy a really needy plant.
Right.
So it's if you're just starting out, it's really good to get the tried and true ones.
Okay, so let's talk about that, because, you know, let's first talk about where we're at in the cycle, because it's June now, and May was the big month, because when I started doing the planting, it was probably about 2-3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And so every day I'm out there, you know, sort of obsessing over what I see. I pop out the front door, and I'm like, come on. Come on, plant. I feel like, I guess it's just the Chicago in me that I just feel like I got ripped off. And I know that's not the case. So talk about, where's June in the cycle? I mean, is this a planting month? Is this a sit back and relax kind of month? What is June typically like in Chicago?
June is a good month for planting annuals and vegetables. Like, I would highly recommend getting your vegetables in the ground now if you want to have crops throughout the year. Also, it's on the edge of, you want to plant now, but you're getting close to where it's going to get really hot, and you don't want to be planting things when it gets really hot.
Why?
Because the whole planting process is a little stressful to the plant, and then it needs water more. With the hot days, it can wilt, and then you're going to have to keep watering it and watering it and watering it. So it's really good in June, too, if you did plant something recently, to keep watering it really well to get it established, because it's only going to get hotter. And then once it gets established, then that's when you can sit back and relax.
So you need some time for it to take.
Yes, exactly. You need time for it to take.
Okay. All right. So June. So let's talk about, there's a lot of things we're going to talk about tonight. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you have questions, concerns, you want some more expert advice from Jacob than me going, what's a plant? they'll work out. 312-981-7200. We're already getting some texts in. You know, my frustration at the beginning of the night was about my hydrangea. I was in a situation where I bought a hydrangea, and I'll go out there and I'll put water, and it looked beautiful. And I come out the next day and it's shriveled up and it looks like I did something wrong. And then the next day it's back to being beautiful. What's going on with this plant?
Is it in the full sun?
It is not. It's in a shaded little area.
Okay. When it's wilting, is it in the middle of the day?
Yes.
Okay. But then it seems to be like, yeah, fine, and the leaves are turgid like later in the evening.
Yeah.
So it sounds like it might either be, are you watering it?
That's, yeah, I water. I mean, okay, occasionally. I mean, it gets enough
do you
water.
Do you check?
How often I water.
How often is
okay, so I probably do it once a day.
Okay, that's actually really good.
Maybe once every other day.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how long ago did you put it in the ground?
We put it in the ground probably about 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
2 weeks ago.
One of the things that could be happening is that because it's newly planted, it could be a little stressed out. And in the heat of the day, when it's the hottest, that's when it's the most stressed. And that's definitely a good time to maybe give a little more water.
Okay.
And then when you're seeing it looking healthy again, that's when it's probably turning into evening and cooling off. So the heat of the day is when they're the most stressed. So that's why it's really good to really water your plants throughout June, so that when it gets hotter this summer, that you don't have even
okay,
more
so that's a good stress. That's a good advice to get out there when it's at its peak sun, mm-hmm, and be able, mm-hmm, to water at that time. Are there different hydrangeas that are better for the skilled gardener?
Yes. So if the one you bought, was it blue or pink?
It's pink.
Yeah. So
a beautiful pink. There's two of them.
They're beautiful, and they're even more beautiful if you live in like the Northeast or something like that. But here we have very cold winters, and all the blue and pink ones, even the ones that they say are really hardy, are not that hardy, at least what we find. The thing about those hydrangeas, that species, is that they bloom on old wood. And so in the winter, we get just enough cold that it kills back some of the buds. And those are the buds it needs to flower. So you end up getting little to no flowers the next year on those
great
pink and blue ones. Yeah.
See, I told the story, I think, sort of kicking the tires. You know, I can't, when I went up to Gethsemane and I was talking to the woman about it, and she was very thoughtful and very knowledgeable. But I turned into like, I was just like, well, what are we talking about on his plant? Like, I was just like the guy, the Chicago guy who felt like, you know, I was really testing her. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, this is they usually will bloom 3 years. That's what she said. And I was like, yeah, you know, I go, yeah, okay, well, I'll see about that. Okay, I'll take it. You know what, how much? Okay, I'll take it. So it's to hear this kind of thing is, she said that in the city environment, 2 to 3 years, because she said something that they were 5-year plants plus, But she said, because it's a city environment and depending on your location, 2 to 3 years.
Like that would be the longevity of the plant itself? Oh, interesting. I actually hadn't heard that one before, but...
All right, see?
Well,
I knew it. It's a whole racket. The whole thing's a racket.
No, I'll admit, even Chicago Botanic Garden had fallen for that spiel too, because we had gotten this certain cultivar of blue hydrangea. We planted it on a huge hillside and thinking it was going to be a huge wow. And... no, we get like one or two flowers. It was a huge dud.
Oh, no.
So I have no faith in the pink or blue ones around here. You might be able to get away with it if you live like, if you have like a little, what they call a microclimate, where it's like a protected space where maybe like you have a building on one side and maybe another wall on another side. And, it has protection in the winter. But I say if you want a hydrangea and you want that same flower effect, given you won't have blue or pink flowers, I think you should just go with the foolproof Annabelle hydrangea. Mm-hmm. They even have one now that is a pink version of the Annabelle hydrangea.
Okay. 312-981-7200. Jacob Burns is the curator of perennials, and he's here to answer questions and dish out dirt. I just threw that out there. 312-981-7200. They shut the lights off at the Clinton headquarters here, because they're going to show a video before she comes out, I guess. But you know what? Why don't we take a break? We'll come back. We'll get Secretary Clinton on and continue to take your questions and calls about gardening. So download. Stay with us. Like a prize fighter coming in from the locker room, Secretary Hillary Clinton is taking a long walk to the stage, but she is on camera. As she has won enough delegates to become the nominee for the Democratic Party for president 2016. And she is, they're doing a huge show here at her Brooklyn headquarters. They did a video and really played up the historic moment, the first female nominee. So we're going to have her speech here in just a moment. We'll get back to the calls. They're calling in right now. Talking about gardening, 312-981-7200. Jacob, we'll get back to the segment once we get to Hillary Clinton as she's making her way to the stage. Rob, she's taking a long time. She's milking it.
Absolutely, as well she should. Again, as you mentioned, this is a historic moment. So as we watch Hillary Clinton finally make her way to the podium, let's tell you that she took New Jersey in the end easily over Bernie Sanders. 85% of the precincts reporting right now, 63%, almost 64% of the vote to Bernie Sanders, 36%. And she, again, is slowly making her way up to that podium, and she is at it right now. Let's just go ahead and pot this up a little bit so you can get an idea of the crowd noise at the Clinton campaign headquarters in Brooklyn, New York. She has the number of delegates needed to become the Democratic nominee for President of the United States. Again, a historic moment tonight.
I hope she's got the rights to this track.
Yeah. That would be nice.
Here we go.
Here's Hillary Clinton. Say that you want to say. Still soaking it all in. People have been waiting there for, I would estimate, Justin, at least 2 hours.
Taken with me, and I am so grateful.
We apologize. Clearly, there's some audio issues right now. Here we go.
Tonight, but we are all standing under a glass ceiling right now. But don't worry, we're not smashing this one. Thanks to you, we've reached a milestone. The first time the first time in our nation's history that a woman will be a major party's nominee for president of the United States. Tonight's victory is not about one person. It belongs to generations of women and men who struggled and sacrificed and made this moment possible. In our country, it started right here in New York, a place called Seneca Falls in 1848. When a small but determined group of women and men came together with the idea that women deserved equal rights, and they set it forth in something called the Declaration of Sentiments, and it was the first time in human history that that kind of declaration occurred. So we all owe so much to those who came before, and tonight belongs to all of you. I want to thank all the volunteers, community leaders, the activists, and organizers who supported our campaign in every state and territory. And thanks especially to our friends in New Jersey for such a resounding victory tonight. Thanks for talking to your neighbors, for making contributions. Your efforts have produced a strong majority of the popular vote, victories in a majority of the contests, and after tonight, a majority of pledged delegates. Across the country who have taken the time to talk with me. I've learned a lot about you, and I've learned about those persistent problems and the unfinished promise of America that you are living with. So many of you feel like you're out there on your own, that no one has your back. Well, I do. I hear you. I see you. And as your president, I will always have your back. I want to congratulate Senator Sanders for the extraordinary campaign he has run. He has spent his long career in public service, fighting for progressive causes and principles, and he's excited millions of voters, especially young people. And let there be no mistake, Senator Sanders, his campaign, and the vigorous debate that we've had about how to raise incomes, reduce inequality, increase upward mobility have been very good for the Democratic Party and for America.
So there you have it. Hillary Clinton is now the Democratic nominee for President of the United States, speaking to supporters in Brooklyn, New York, where her headquarters are. And that's it, Justin. Hillary Clinton in her own words tonight.
There you go. A historic moment here. Secretary Clinton, now the nominee for the Democratic Party for the president 2016. And an amazing, and for her to be able to say that, you know, we've learned something as Democrats, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders were going at each other, for her to be able to put the olive branch out and say that we have learned things and she's heard Bernie Sanders. That's a big moment for Democrats. And, you know, we'll see if that actually rings true in the upcoming weeks. All right, so we're going to transfer back to gardening. 312-981-7200. Bob's on the line. We'll talk with you, Bob, right after the news here, so don't go away. But we see that the blue spruce, dead branches. That's never good. I'm not even the gardener. Jacob's the gardener. That's never good. But you know what? We'll let Jacob walk you through it. 312-981-7200. Text or call if you got some questions or need some advice or some help with gardening. It's a download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. We are in the middle of one of a segment that has taught me so much. Jacob Burns is in studio with me from the Chicago Botanic Garden. He's a curator of perennials, and he's helping me with my newfound religion, gardening. I got to say, I mean, it's unbelievable to be able to dig up a plot of land and be able to put something in there and then to see it actually do something. So cool. How did I not know about this from before? All right, so we've got some people on the line that have questions. We also have some advice. Also, just got a text who said, why are all the great historical botanists named Jacob? Yeah, there you go. So you're in good company, Jacob.
That is interesting.
It's like, there you go. All right, let's go to Bob. Bob, you are on with Jacob Burns of Chicago Botanic Garden. What's your issue?
Yeah, I've got a blue spruce in the backyard. It's in the corner of the yard. It's maybe about 20 foot tall. And the top of it is all turning brown, and it doesn't look real good. It used to be pretty healthy. I cut some of the branches off down on the bottom about 3 years ago, and I'm wondering if I did more harm than good with it, and I wonder if there's anything I could do to save it. It looks like it's slowly going away.
All right, Bob, what do you think, Jacob?
Well, with the blue spruce, there has been a canker that's been going around, and I think it's actually a canker mixed with a fungus. It's a combination, both things attacking them. But all over, I'm from Michigan, and all over Michigan, people plant rows of spruce trees to kind of like long fields to kind of block the wind and stuff. And you can see just rows of mature spruce trees dying from, but they're usually dying from the base up. The bottom branches are dying first. And that's been associated with this combination of a canker and a fungus. But with yours dying at the top, I'm not really sure what could cause that right away. But if it is dying from the base, it could be something like that. And the thing that triggers it is having a spruce tree in a place that might not get enough sun or not enough airflow or the soil being too moist. So there can be several, you know, factors that can contribute to your spruce tree declining. Is the site shady? That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, I got rid of him, unfortunately, because it started to break up. So, if you want to call back in and let us know if it's shady, we can answer. Let's go to Marcos. Marcos, you got an issue with your tomato plants. What's the problem?
Yeah, I just planted some tomato plants. I just picked them up at like a local store, and they're getting black spots on them. And I noticed it happened right after heavy rain. And somebody was telling me it might be low magnesium levels. I didn't know how to attack that.
Okay, first off, you know what? We're gonna get somebody else for magnesium levels. Maybe we'll get a chemist in here. But Jacob, what you nodded your head on this one.
Yeah, it sounds like, I mean, especially with the happening right after a rain. A lot of the times when plants get watered overhead, meaning you shower the leaves and the entire plant, it can lead to the humidity and watering overhead. It can lead to a number of things, including black spot. It can lead to powdery mildew. It can lead to a number of things. So when you're watering, I mean, given you can't control the rain, but when you're watering, it is best to water around the base of the plant as opposed to the entire plant.
There you go.
Okay, yeah. I have been watering on over the top now that you mentioned it. So just stick to the base then.
Yeah, try not to water the leaves.
Yep. All right, Marcos. Thank you for that. And I would suggest getting a weather machine that you can control the weather. 773 says, disagree about watering in the heat of the day, like steaming your vegetables. On hot days, water early or water late, but yes, water.
Yeah, I agree that you want to water during the morning or the evening, because that's when the water you won't waste water. It doesn't evaporate as much when from the sun. But if your plant is sitting there wilting in the middle of the day, it is good to give it water. It needs it.
Well, you mentioned the sort of pests or the what's happening with the canker. You know, what are we looking for when we have those kind of situations for slugs and mildew and pests, like what should we be aware of as gardeners in this area right now?
Well, right now, like actually just the other day, I had aphids on one of my honeysuckle
vines. What's an aphid?
So an aphid is this little tiny, about less than an eighth of an inch. It's a little tiny kind of pear-shaped insect. You can see a couple of antennas sticking out. And they just cluster at the tips of your new growth on your plant. And you can notice them once you start to see the new growth kind of looking distorted, maybe even yellowing. That's when you might want to take a closer look, and you might see a giant population of aphids like I did.
Wow.
And so what I did was to get rid of them, there's a number of ways you can get rid of them. If it's a small population, you can just rub them off, squish them, which is kind of gross. But if it's got a lot of them at the tip of the plant and they're not all over the plant, what I did was I just cut the tip of the new growth off and disposed of it, and then picked off the rest of them is what I did. If you don't want to cut any parts of your plant off, what you can do is you could spray the plant with cold water and hopefully dislodge them and maybe even drown them. Or you could make a mixture of dish soap with water and spray that on the plant. They don't like that either. So
yeah, yep. I would think the plants wouldn't like that either.
And the dish soap doesn't affect the plant. I mean, as long as you're not putting a whole bottle in there.
Now I'm thinking I should get out there with the dish soap and like clean it up. You know, make them look good. No buds on the hibiscus. Help! I feed it. I water it. Nothing happens.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if this is an indoor, like a tropical hibiscus, where it's outside in the summer, but maybe brought inside in the winter.
I think that's, yeah.
Yeah, that would be more of a houseplant issue, and it's not flowering. It could be a number of things, not enough light. But if it's getting fertilized, then, you know, that's a good thing. If it's an outdoor hibiscus, if it's a hardy hibiscus, one that actually can live in the ground over the winter, those emerge really late in the year, and they're probably actually just pushing out of the ground now.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people think that, oh, my hardy hibiscus died because they didn't see it all through May or June. But no, they emerged really late. So
there you go. So yeah. you either A, are just, it's too early, or B, the plant's dead and you just throw it away. So really you gotta sort of figure that one out.
The other thing is, if it's been outside, it's been pretty cool. We haven't had a lot of hot days.
Yeah, I was going to say, what does the weather have an effect on the planting? May was a pretty cool month.
Yeah, I mean, if it's like a tropical plant, if it is a tropical hibiscus, it probably likes those hot days. It needs that warmth, and we haven't had a lot of it.
312-981-7200. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with Jacob Burns from the Chicago Botanic Garden. We'll wrap up our segment here on giving advice to Chicago gardeners. If you got advice, question, comment, concern, 312-981-7200. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. We are taking your questions about gardening. The Chicago Botanic Gardens, Jacob Burns is here. He's the curator of perennials. I love it. I'm learning so much. I'm mispronouncing so much. Let's go to Robin. Robin, what's your question? Are you a gardener, Robin?
Well, kind of. A local gardening center has a mountain ash tree. And I've seen them in yards, and I love them. They're beautiful. Do I have to worry about the ash borer?
Oh, good question.
Yeah, that is a good question. So a mountain ash, fortunately, is not even the same genus as an ash tree. So they just happen to call it ash, I think because the leaves are similar. But it's a completely different genus, and the emerald ash borer does not affect it.
Okay, there you go. So that's
wonderful.
That's wonderful. This is the greatest, this is good news.
Yeah.
It's awesome
Thank
to get
you
good
so
news
no
at
problem.
9:50. So that's awesome, Robin. Thank you. Rosemary. Rosemary, you got a question about your poppies.
Yeah. It's getting real leggy. It's done blooming. One is done blooming. One is still blooming. But it gets really, the leaves are laying all over it. And it's a couple years old. Can I cut all those leaves and cut it all down?
No, go ahead.
I had the same thing with Daloy. I had beautiful one by the door, and the leaves are real long. Well, then it's starting to lay over on my other plants. It's done blooming. What do I do? Cut it all the way down to the ground or what?
With the poppy, those actually, once they're finished blooming, those go dormant. So you mm-hmm. might start seeing some yellowing on the leaves. That's a natural process. It's going to start going dormant. And I would try to leave the foliage as long as possible, because what the plant is doing is it's going to photosynthesize and store up as much nutrients as it can before it goes back into dormancy to reemerge next year. So if you can wait as long as possible to cut them, that would be great. But if they get pretty yellow and just completely unsightly, you can cut those back. Okay. With the daylily, that actually is a pretty tough plant. So if the leaves are too long and floppy, you could cut those all the way to the ground and you'll get a new flush of leaves.
Okay.
That's what I was going to say too, Rosemary. Exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, but you don't know, you know, if you're hurting the plant or not, you know. So the poppies are really... they're really pretty and they're big, you know. But and then, now where is the seed? Now somebody asked me for seeds from that. Is that from that little round thing?
Yeah, you'll have that big seed pod on the top of the stem. And so you'll actually don't want to cut that down because you want that to ripen.
Okay. And you get the seed from that little pod?
Yeah, once you shake it and it starts rattling, then you'll know that you can harvest those.
Oh, it's got to rattle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rosemary.
Okay.
Thank you, Rosemary.
All right, thank you.
Rosemary could take that out, put it on the bagel, right? Okay, so I'm interested. I had a good point about the. I have a situation in my yard, that I have, and my next door neighbor has a tremendous garden. She's great, and she's done such a good job of creating a landscape that there are rabbits in the area. And those rabbits come over to my yard, Jacob, and they decide to nibble off the side of the hostas,
mm-hmm.
and then also some of the stuff we have in the front area.
Mm-hmm.
Should I kill the rabbit?
Well, wouldn't we all like them to be gone? Yes.
I mean, I feel like it's humane if I catch them with my bare hands. Like, I'm not going to do any pesticide, I'm not going to do any chemicals, but if I could catch that rabbit with my bare hands, then
you'd feel really proud of yourself. Right. Yeah, exactly.
But they do like to eat off. But I mean, they're not going to necessarily touch the flowers. Are they not going to touch?
No, they'll eat anything.
Really?
Yes. Yes. This is coming from experience. They'll eat anything. No, but the only thing I can suggest to really. Besides murdering them, is to...
I've seen Watership Down, so I don't want to do that. I think that was... I don't remember that story specifically, but I know they're rabbits. But go ahead.
There is a product that you can buy. It's also made to repel deer. It is a spray. They call it like Liquid Fence. There's different brands of it. But if you spray that on the plant, that can... it won't taste well, so they will avoid the plant. It doesn't hurt the plant. The only problem is they can get used to it, so it is good to maybe get two different products of that.
Oh, yeah, left and right hand.
And
right.
Change it up every once in a while. Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to Dave. Let's get Dave in before we wrap here. Dave, how you doing?
Yeah, doing well. Hey, all thanks right. for the show.
Hey, thanks. What do you got?
Yeah, question for you. There's supposed to be some new disease that's hitting the general rose population. Do you know anything about it? Or are you able to talk about it a little bit?
All right, thanks, Dave. You might have stumped our guy here.
Yeah, you did. Actually, I'm not a rose expert. So
wait a second, you're not a rose. Like I'm of not. All the flowers, you're mentioning the daylilies and how they work and their whole thing, and you're like, roses don't know it.
That's why.
What's a rose?
Actually, I mean, I would my answer would be buy a knockout rose because they have so many less diseases.
If I were going to plant roses, I would be obsessed with picking one off all the time to parody The Bachelor to everyone who would walk by and be like, I've got a rose for you. And then I would ruin the plant and be done. And
no, I think 90% of the rose diseases come from watering overhead. I think that one of the things you should really avoid is watering the leaves with roses, or you're going to get powdery mildew or other things like that.
All right, as we wrap up here, let me go through some of the points that you brought up to me via email before we got here. So so as bulbs and ephemerals go dormant, cut back foliage and dig up and divide. I don't know what any of that means.
Okay, so bulbs are like tulips, daffodils.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So any bulbs are probably mostly done blooming. The spring ephemeral type stuff is mostly done blooming by now. What you're going to see now is like really ugly, kind of like the poppy that the lady was talking about. Ugly foliage laying on the ground. It's an eyesore. But like I said, it's really good to try to let that foliage last as long as possible, because you want that plant to be able to reserve enough nutrients to get by till the next year. But what I've seen some people do in the landscape, and I'm not sure how much I don't know whether I like it or not, but people will take like a entire clump of daffodil foliage and they will take it and tie it in a knot. And they'll do that to every clump, and then like it conserves space, I guess, so that they can plant other things around them.
Okay.
So that is one way to make it look a little tidier and to keep the foliage intact for as long as possible. I would try to keep it on until it's actually brown. You could cut it when it's starting to yellow, but definitely don't cut it when it's green. Another thing is, if you want more, if you want to have additional plants, now when it's going dormant is a good time to dig it up and separate those bulbs. You'll find baby bulbs attached to it that you can move around, make more plants. Oh. Yeah.
Okay. Also, you say stake tall flowers to keep them from blowing over in the wind.
Yeah. So right now, people are probably putting out their dahlias, planting sunflowers, stuff that gets really tall eventually. So what you want to do is start staking that now, so that you're not going to get a windy day like we had yesterday, you're not going to get that plant blowing over and stem breaking. So, and tomato cages are always good to have.
Didn't spend much time at all, so you're going to have to come back talking about gardens, about vegetables. Hillary Clinton took our vegetable time. you have to come back, because this was really fun, and I enjoy learning more about gardening, my new religion. Jacob Burns is the curator of perennials at the Chicago Botanic Garden. Thanks to everyone who called in, and thanks for texting in your questions. And Jacob, thanks for being here, and I hope to see you again soon.
Thanks for having me.
This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. All right, coming up, it's the worst. 312-981-7200. I'm very excited about this. We got tickets and pizzas to give away. What's the worst? 312-981-7200. I would go off on a rant. I'll go off at disrespectful, lack of decorum. The dredge of society, Rob. The parents that stand up and block your view during your kid's dance recital.
I went to one on Sunday.
Yeah, and could you imagine if somebody, like, right when your kid started, that someone was standing in front of you going, are there seats behind? Get out of the way!
Let me put it to you this way. Had somebody was standing in front of me in front of, while little Ava was up there during her ballet recital, there would have been breaking news here at WGN.
Thank you. I mean, I couldn't believe that the person was so inconsiderate, the persons, their people, that they didn't think about that people were there. We're not there. We're not, like, hanging out. It's not like, oh, it's the fourth inning of the Cubs game. Someone's walking by. Good to see you. You know, like, it's not like it's the Bud Light guy. It's the dance recital. We're there to see our kid, man. We're not even there for the art.
There was a guy that called when you were ranting earlier this evening, where he said that he was at his daughter's graduation on Saturday, and when she came across to get her diploma, somebody stood up right in front of him. So he couldn't even miss the whole thing.
That's like a big... I don't understand why people are not thinking about, you know, their actions ruining moments. I got this lesson taught to me the hardest way, and it was stupid. I was a kid, and I decided I wanted to go get a hot dog. I was probably like 18 or something at Wrigley. And I wanted to get a hot dog or something, or I came to my seats later, whatever it was. But at the time, there was this whole cult around Sammy Sosa. So when Sosa would bat, especially when he was chasing home runs, that's what everybody waited for. And so here I am, standing up to go to the bathroom or get a hot dog or being late, right when Sammy Sosa is up to the bat. And this guy laid into me. Like, you would have thought I caused cancer. Like, you have no concept of what it gets to sit down. We are here for one reason only. And I was like, oh, my God, geez. I don't know. Maybe it was Sammy Sosa's dad. It was just like, maybe this was a recital for Sammy Sosa.
What's going down, y'all? I got worldwide family.
It's a download. It's the worst. Yay! 312-981-7200. I'm Justin Kaufman, and tonight we bring you the worst, our weekly segment where we collectively complain and bemoan and cry and sulk in each other's misery about what is the worst. 312-981-7200. Not only do you get to complain about what's the worst, but you get to do it for prizes. That's right. We've got prizes tonight, and we have comics in studio with me, Kelsey Huff and Soli Santos. Both of you, good to see you guys. Soli, you're now a regular.
No, I'm expecting a check on Friday.
I know. I feel like there's a setup here.
What she isn't telling you is she's been sleeping in the basement this whole time.
I thought I saw you. That's weird. Okay.
It's very nice there.
It's nice. Yeah.
It's warm and comfortable.
Congratulations. Today was announced a new cast ensemble of the Cates here, and you are a member of the Cates. Congratulations.
Yes. Yeah. High fives. They translate really well on radio.
Yeah. And Kelsey F, of course, is the founder, and I would say, do you ever give yourself a title?
She's my boss.
Managing director?
Creator because I have a real God complex.
Creator.
She is my boss.
Assistant creator.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm not the assistant.
No, you're not the assistant. Soli, if you work hard, you could be the assistant creator.
She owes me a check is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Soli's getting paid a lot today.
So you've got the birthday show, which is coming up at the Diversity Rock and Bowl, which I'm told it's not called that anymore. Isn't that weird, Pete? Wouldn't you call it that?
Yeah, it's not that anymore.
Well, Soli's like, no, it's the River Bowl.
No, and I'm like, no, listen, I've had head injuries. I may be incorrect.
I think the formal title is Diversity River Bowl.
You have to call me out on the radio. Thank you.
But I think that everybody in Chicago knows it as the Diversity Rockin' Bowl, right? Anyway, the Rockin' Bowl's July 7th. Also, you can see Soli at Simone's in Pilsen a week from tomorrow, and you can see Kelsey and the Cates at the bookseller on Friday.
Nailed that. Oh. It's like you do this for a living or something. Oh. Did you just have to stretch? Did you lunge it out?
I did. My back hurts from that. There was like a lot of muscles.
You know how much you had to concentrate to do that?
I did. That was bad.
Reading from a card is hard.
Exactly. It's a lot. You got to stretch it out. All right, Pete Zimmerman, you want to start us off, my man?
Yes.
What do you got tonight?
You know what's the worst?
What's the worst?
Slow pokes.
Slow pokes.
Yeah. People, I mean, we have places to go, people. Get out of the way.
Just in general, walking, driving, bicycles.
Yes. Slow pokes.
Yeah, because I hate those 90-year-old people with those canes walking in front of me.
Indeed.
Right.
You know where to go.
Yeah.
You went right to your target audience.
I was going to say, no, I would say that slow pokes to me are like, I had one who was just going too slow on a side street, you know, where you're like, you've overestimated how safe you need to be, you know, and I'm just like, all right, I get it. And then you're like, am I driving too fast? Am I being reckless? And you're like, no, I mean, I'm going 5 miles per hour here.
Yeah. You place that blame where it should belong on everyone else.
Exactly. No responsibility.
I think slow pokes in me because I'm someone who's I'm a foot commuter. Is that a thing? I walk a lot. And the folks who are the texters, the ones that are like mid walk and then they just stop.
Oh.
I don't know if that's a slow poke. I think it's the modern age. That's the modern slow poke.
That's the modern slow poke.
Yeah, and I just like bash right into them.
Well, you have to. You have to send a message.
I'm sending everybody a message with my chest bumps.
I almost wish, you know, unfortunately, you know, in the sense that this is radio, because you just acted that out.
Yeah.
And
Kelsey's very
animated. You got me going with the slow poke.
All right, Kelsey, why don't you set us up? What's next? What do you got for the worst?
All right, this is what I hate. I hate when you have, maybe they're even your friends or whatever. I'm not, and they just have to constantly mention in every conversation their trip that they just got back from Europe or whatever. Like, you know, you're eating a croissant and they're like, oh, when I was just in France. We're like, all right, we get it. You have a real job.
It's the Portlandia when they get back from Spain and he's like, this is how they pour wine in Spain.
Yeah. I know. The worst, right? You're cultured. We get it. I'm not trying to be a jerk, but... And I can say croissant. Like, I'm not going to say croissant. Like,
we get it. You're a creative vacationer. We get it.
Yeah, we get it. You have money.
You have money. Right.
You're the greatest.
You have a passport. You can leave the country with government permission. Thank you for reminding
me. We're rubbing it in.
Thank you. I can't even leave the state.
You can't even leave the basement, Soli.
You're right.
All right, Soli, what do you got for us?
I have
What's it getting intense?
You know when
what did you just say? Yeah, I like when you take a breath. You're like, buckle up, you guys.
There we go.
Brace, because this is some serious kind of stuff. Okay, you know how like when you could be at a fast food joint and somebody grabs like the napkins, but they don't grab just one. They grab like the whole stack where it's like 20 napkins, but then they only use one. Napkin,
right.
Mm-hmm. And then they leave the pile, and it's kind of like now you don't want to even use those because they've
useless.
Been corrupted. They've been corrupted.
You'd be okay if the napkins were thrown away.
Yes,
I mean even the waste in this case is better than saying, you know what, I only used one, so I'm gonna leave the rest here because that is gross. There's no one is going to use those.
They've been tainted.
They've been
to
tainted.
To be fair, when I was in college and have a lot of money, I did pick those up for a little TP action. They're not
pee.
Sometimes you need some toilet paper, and sometimes it needs to be free.
Sounds abrasive.
Life of a stand-up comedian.
I know. Some people go to France. Some people steal leftover Starbucks napkins for toilet paper.
We can see why you're mad at your friends who go on vacation.
The struggle is real.
Yeah. 312-981-7200. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. I want to get Dawn, who's on the line. 312-981-7200. I got a ton of texts. Call in for the worst for prizes. Stay with us. It's the worst here on the download. 312-981-7200. Our weekly segment where we collectively complain about what's the worst in our society. Kelsey Huff and Soli Santos are in studio with me. Kelsey's the creator of the Cates.
Right.
Soli's a new cast member. The birthday show is coming up at the Diversity River Bowl.
Oh, yeah, correction made.
I changed it for you. On July 7th, this weekend, you can see Kelsey and the Cates at the Bookseller. That's on the 10th. And you can see Soli and Simone's in Pilsen next Wednesday. Got it.
Yeah.
I'm killing it.
You know what? You stopped reading from the card, and then it all went haywire.
It just tumbled out of control.
Like, whoa.
All right.
Weekdays?
All right, here we go. 7:08. We're going to go to the calls and to the texts. The worst is when HBO spoils Game of Thrones in the episode thumbnails. Do they do that? I'm not a Game of Thrones guy. But I will say this. I will piggyback on 708. I will yes and 708.
Ooh.
And say that HBO, they are the worst when it comes to their DVR game. Because what they do is they have on the bench. Pete is nodding his head.
Big shakes over there.
Because what they do, I will record and watch later Silicon Valley and Veep. They're back-to-back.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is that when you get to the end of the recording and they go, next week, and they show the little trailer, 15-second trailer, in about 7 seconds it just stops and says, you're done with this episode. Delete now. And you're like, oh, couldn't you just... Like, and what really drives me crazy, Kelsey,
I can feel you tightening.
Is that it is not the old school kind of, I just recorded this. It's not like they are smart enough now that when I go back to play it, it will tell me HBO DVR. Like, it knows what it's all synced up on the grid. So they're, all I could take from this is that they're doing it on purpose for some reason. Some reason, I don't know why, if they're like trying to get me to record the next thing. I don't know what it is, because when you record the next show, Veep, it picks up right in the halfway point where the Silicon Valley trailer was. So then I have to tape Game of Thrones if I want to see what's next week on Veep. And I'm telling you, I think they're doing, and see, 708's like, oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is, because I know that they have the program. It says HBO DVR. I flipped out when I saw it. It said, it comes up, you know, mm-hmm. HBO, but now it says DVR. So
wait, how does that go again?
You know what I mean? Like, and then it plays like a DVR. So they're
getting
it.
You. You're...
I don't know why, though. Yeah. I don't know. It's just to annoy me.
Ooh, well, they do want you to go. So they want you to just continue to binge, right? That's what you're saying?
Like, I get it, but I'm not recording. I didn't record it, so it's not there.
I see.
That's what I'm saying. So it's like it's futile. I feel like there's something like, we got him. Some pencil pusher in New York is like, well, it's working. We got them now. They're gonna watch, and I'm like, I don't even know why. Why are you frustrating me like that?
Yeah,
put the whole thing. The whole idea of the trailer is for me to watch next week. Why would you cut it off? Now I'm not gonna watch.
You know what this is?
Sorry, I'm done.
The most boring comic book antihero. Just a guy in HBO, like, some guy in the radio is gonna be real mad one week.
I'm telling you, 708 says 708's like, with me. 708's like they are evil.
You guys are, I love that they're evil, yet you guys are both, I'm assumingly, paying for HBO.
Yes,
and
we
continue
are.
To pay.
We are. And we continue. It's, yeah. It's part of
just
a package.
Just take someone's HBO Go account like the rest of America.
Even if I did that, it would cut off. What? That's what I'm saying. Even if I was pirating or no pirating of HBO, it's still the same issue. All right.
Yeah.
Moving on.
I'm glad that you feel like you feel better, like you've got that off your chest.
I got it off my chest.
And listen, we're on to you, HBO guy.
And then 708 says you could be change the DVR recording choices. See, but I understand that. But I get that. But what I'm saying is I shouldn't have to.
He turned on you real fast.
I'm not going into the settings for the trailer for Silicon Valley. I'm just not. All right.
708.
All right. Sorry.
I feel like you lost a comrade there.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. Here we go. All right. 708 says the worst is making a lot of calls and having to deal with slow, long voicemail greetings.
Mm.
Yes, there's no doubt about that.
Does anyone use voicemail? Have you tried texting?
Yeah, texting. But if they're having to do it for business, you're probably not texting. So I would say that, yes, if you are in the business, hey, this is Soli Santos. I'm not in the office. If you want to send an email, the email is Soli Santos.
That's spot on Soli.
Yeah, spot on.
I was going to say, wait a minute.
Sorry.
Soli Santos, thanks for calling. Sounds a lot like your angry HBO guy.
They're very similar. I got one character and I'm just using it.
How did I age like 30 years in my voice?
I apologize.
You're very, very sleepy and very nasally.
Yeah. I've got one guy.
What is your voicemail? Do you have
I just go, hi, this is Justin at WGN. Leave a message.
And then you just rant about HBO for 7 minutes.
My favorite is my friend Adam's. He goes, hi, this is Adam. I'm not available. I'm apparently away from a phone that I take with me everywhere.
Which is basically admitting, I'm not taking your call.
And then I don't want to answer
this
call.
I say that. I'm like, well, that just means that, do you not understand the nuances of picking up or not picking up?
I love
that.
Whatever. I wish my new voicemail was like, text me. That's it.
Let's do it. Tonight, let's do it on the air. We'll do it. Kelsey, text me.
Text me.
Text me.
Who am I kidding? Nobody calls me or texts me.
All right, here we go. Let's go. Let's rapid fire through these. 262, the worst is when the Cubs are on WGN TV and you only have WGN America.
Ooh.
I don't know about that. 708 says the worst is when you're just ready to leave work and your boss sees you and says he needs you to stay for another 2 hours.
Oh.
Who does that?
Every boss I've ever had. Yeah.
No way.
You're
the boss who's like,
walk out the door so it looks like you're coming in, but you're leaving.
Wait, you dance moonwalk? Yeah. Like literally?
You moonwalk out backwards.
You have never had a job. That cannot happen.
That cannot.
Do you only work at dance studios?
Come on.
708, this is my favorite. This is a early favorite. You want to know what's the worst? Little shops.
Of horror?
No, just little shops.
What does that mean?
Like less small stores, right?
So just like tiny little dollhouses he has to squeeze his big body into.
It's, you know what? I'm actually going to read the text that's before it. So Little Shops is actually the end of the text that was before it.
This guy's DVRing you.
But I think Little Shops is great. I don't like what he says. People in your personal space in the area, when you hand their chit-chatting, and I'm referring to you go to a little town and there's a lot of little shops. That's what they say. But no, I like 708, Little Shops.
You know what I hate? Little Shops.
That might win you a pizza. The texting program here at WGN may win you a pizza because it split that. The worst is when you're in a store like a tourist type store and everywhere area that you go to browse and relax and look at things and decompress from life, there are people in your personal space. That's what they're saying.
Maybe don't go to the Disney store, perhaps.
Yeah, right.
Maybe a library.
262, open face sandwiches.
Oh, not even a good tuna melt. Oh.
We had this one last week or the week before where I think that actually Pete brought that one up.
Oh, Pete. I was with you on the slow pokes. But what about a good tuna melt?
Yeah,
I'll put another piece of bread on top of it.
Right. Why not have a bread? Why not make it a sandwich? Don't call it a sandwich if you got it open.
Sometimes I like to look at what I'm shoving in my mouth hole.
What's going down in the gullet?
Yeah.
262, the worst is when a cop pulls somebody over for speeding on the opposite side of a six-lane divided interstate, and then your side is only going 45 miles per hour in a 70 because for the next 3 or 4 miles, and the front three people are side by side, and no one will pass each other. Wow.
Wow.
That's a good
point.
That's
a lot. That sounds like a word problem. I feel like I got confused.
Let's go to Dawn. Dawn, what's the worst, Dawn?
Oh, the worst is when you're making a left-hand turn and there's an arrow only and the person in the very front doesn't move and you're honking your horn and they just won't move enough. They move enough just for them to make the turn and then 10 people behind them are stuck waiting another 10
And they're
10
doing
minutes.
It on purpose, Dawn. It's like a game. You know, it's like a gang initiation.
Yeah.
They're like, they wait till it's yellow and they're like, ha ha, gotcha, and you're stuck behind.
Yeah.
It's like getting beat in the chest. Is that what
you just said? Thanks, Dawn. Thank you. Let's go to Joy. Joy, what's the worst, Joy?
It doesn't rank right up there with chemo or with working retail, but I think the worst is when you go into a grocery store for an item and they're offering you those little samples of free food.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, like hummus?
Yeah,
right. Do you know why that's the worst?
Why is it the worst?
Because right before she offers it to you, you notice that she's taking her shoes off and giving herself a foot rub.
I feel like this is a dream you've had, Joy.
It's reality specific.
I think she might be the one giving the samples. She might be the one massaging her feet before she's offering the
Joy, let me ask you a question, though. What did you do?
Well, if you mention very discreetly to the woman that she just gave herself a 2-minute foot rub with, you know, while serving food, very discreetly, just in case she didn't realize, and she looks at you and smiles brightly and says, "Oh, that's okay, honey. I'm wearing the plastic gloves."
She came prepared for this foot play. She came prepared, Joy.
Wow, that's bad. All right, Joy, that's a good one. Hold on, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Extremely specific. She started that bit with the word chemo, though. She started hot.
I think she probably called in at some other point, maybe, and referenced, because I remember there was a, you know, it's the worst, chemo? And I'm like, yeah, that is the worst.
That is the worst. Is the worst.
You win.
Yeah.
On a level.
Yeah.
You get that.
You know, that's not playing fair, though.
No, it's not.
You know what I mean?
Kelsey Huff, Soli Santos, Pete Zimmerman, myself, Justin Cobb, it's the worst. Stay with us.
What's going down,
all right, it's the worst here on the download. 312-981-7200. Soli Santos and Kelsey Huff are in studio with me.
Yes.
847. The worst is when you're trying to take a picture of something and everyone keeps walking in front of you and they stare right at you.
That sounded delicious for some reason. That was a weird reaction.
Fond memories.
You.
That's my bit.
That's my bit. What do you want to see? This face? Come on.
All right, I got a good one here. 773 says, the influx of find your festival style emails from clothing stores. Everyone's trying to cash in on flower crowns and high-waisted shorts. That's a good one.
Ooh.
Right? Don't you think that's a good one, Pete?
Ooh. Yeah. You got an okay.
Find your festival style. Are you looking for your festival style?
What is it? What is it called, too? It's very bohemian chic. Yeah, I love that they're making like flower crowns for like $50. They're like, pick some flowers for free.
This is around the time of year where I start cutting my jeans.
Oh,
The shorts, it's right about now. The beard's going to get a little longer.
That's awesome. And do you leave the little strays?
It's frayed. Yeah, it's frayed on the
edges. Oh, yeah. Very much. Break out those Birks.
What I do is I take a garden tool and I string that stuff out.
That's
so it even
great.
Looks more authentic. Yeah,
do
really
you
great.
Make sure that you get a tan on your face and your arms
before
you get it on your legs so that they will be like 10 shades fairer and slightly pinker than the rest of you?
Yes, absolutely. And I wear a sweater.
Oh,
good. Yeah, it's really nice.
That's
cool.
Awesome.
It's a hipster sweater. Yeah.
And you're a married man. Yeah. Yeah. Somebody said yes to that.
Somebody said yes to the dress.
Wow.
Yes to the
gams.
You're a magician.
Yes to the festival dress.
I'd like to meet that lady.
All right. 312-981-7200. All right. The worst is when someone next to you in the store has Bluetooth and you answer them and they weren't even talking to you.
I love that game.
I always think of Lieutenant O'Hara from
Star Trek.
She's
calling in now. Khan's calling in now.
Could you imagine just going to Target and looking for Khan everywhere?
Yeah,
you found your next bit.
Khan, you're breaking up. Khan, you're breaking up.
Con's you're breaking coming up, through Con. Now, Captain. Yeah.
Just text me, Con.
Do you need some more Lean Cuisine? I found the Lean Cuisine aisle.
Con, put a shirt on. Your chest muscles are really big. Con.
All right, 214. The worst is when you pull up to the light and the guy next to you is picking his nose.
Oh.
Then when he finally sees you, he suddenly pulls out his finger and flips you the dirty bird.
Oh, oh, that's so specific. I love when people come and give specifics. You know, this is they've lived this stuff for
my
real.
My question is, so was he picking with the dirty bird finger?
Yeah, I think that's the
Yeah, that's the thing. Who does that?
Obviously somebody.
Yeah, but you got to like you got to squish that bird.
No,
roll.
No, don't.
That's a lot.
No?
There we go.
That's the worst.
We're moving on. All right.
312. All right, this is good. The worst is when your mother-in-law posts personal stuff on Facebook when she's totally wasted.
Oh, I love it. I wish. Did they send any specifics?
I'm putting that one on the list. That's good.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I want to say something.
No. First of all, why didn't you give me that Bohemian Chic festival dress? It's really in.
I'd like to go to a festival.
Oh, what is this? Florence Henderson and the Machine?
Florence.
Florence I'd do that. All right, this is a long one. Ready?
Ready.
This is the rant. 630. The worst is being a passenger in the car in the left lane when your driver doesn't notice all the cars behind him, which should be going faster than him if you only were in the right lane, like the sign states in the national law. But no one argues that he's going fast enough. That's not the law. The law is slower traffic, stay right. That means the guy in the left lane that is going slower than the others behind him would otherwise be going the worst.
I feel like that's maybe that's the drunk mother-in-law on Facebook.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, I feel like she's nailed it.
That's good. 312-981-7200. It's good stuff tonight. All right. Let's, Pete, you got another one? Let's go around the horn in the studio.
Sure. You know what's the worst?
What's the worst, Pete?
Having to call back a restaurant to confirm your reservation.
Ooh, like they didn't call you.
No, you just, like, once the reservation is made, that's our contract. Right. I'll be there when
yes,
the time comes.
I agree.
Why do I have to call twice?
Well, most of the restaurants, they call you, right? They're going to call you and say, hi, Pete, are you going to be here?
Yeah, and please call back if,
yeah, oh,
you
yeah,
know.
Right.
Wow,
no.
They sound really similar to my voice on my message on my answer machine.
I like that when Pete calls a restaurant, it's an official contract that has been made.
That it is. Yeah, yeah. That's the we have an agreement. I'm going to show up at this time with set amount of people. If something happens, I will alert you.
They are sent such, like, the overhead is so tight at restaurants that they're like, we really need you, Pete. Like, hey, I you know what? I changed my mind. It's going to mess up the bottom.
I do understand because, like, I'll make reservations on OpenTable, you know, like mm-hmm. 6 months in advance to go to DuckDuckGoat or something. And then, you know, you forget about it. And it's like, oh, crap, you know, I have a wedding. But right. Then I will call. Don't, you know, we have an agreement. I'll be there unless I say something.
You're right. Saying is, don't bother me.
Wait a minute. You make reservations 6 months in advance?
He's going to. He's got reservations. He's got weddings. His dance card is full, you guys.
You know what? I'm hungry. Let's go to this restaurant in November.
He's a foodie, man. He's checking it out.
I love that stuff.
He's really into gastromolecular food.
That is dedication.
Food, yeah.
Right.
I love that.
Scented air.
I love me
pizza
some scented
air.
Or you know when they foam, they just take a food and they put it and they make
it
foamy.
They make it foam.
Like, you know what? I don't want to chew.
I didn't want to.
I never wanted
That's the worst. Chewing's the worst.
Pete, have you been to Goose Foot?
No, I have good, not. Right? Yeah.
Oh man, I went.
You did?
Can you believe it? One of my rich friends from France took me. Yeah, Pete, I'm going to hook you up. It's great. I can't hook you up. I'm a liar. I've got more.
Kelsey, what do you got?
This is when I used to work in my office days. I don't like it when your office comrades, like, you do one thing one day. Like, one day I had a donut for lunch. And then for the next 2 years, I was known as Sprinkles. Like, where's
oh,
that?
No.
Yeah. We were like, oh, you're so wacky. You eat dessert at lunch. Am I right, Sprinkles? 2 years, this guy. I'm like, are you kidding me? You can't find another thing to call me? You guys don't have that here at the old WGN?
No, we don't have that. We're respectful of each other.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Not.
No, that's awful.
Not the jerks I work with.
Yeah, that's a
nobody's
jerk.
Memory is able to retain that much information for that long.
So it's just one thing?
So
just
they'll say thing. It for like a week, and then they forget.
Oh, no. Not this fella. 2 years. Ugh.
All right.
You guys don't call me Sprinkles from here on out, though. Right. Like, that's a pact.
I might do that.
No!
All right, Sully, what do you got?
When you're on public transportation and there are plenty of seats available, but that one person that gets on decides
sits
to
right
sit
next to you.
Right next to you.
Why do you do that? Do you think they're lonely?
I don't know.
Do you think
it's
personal?
Creepy.
Do you think that they're being creepy? Like, oh, this is my chance to sit next to a girl?
It's probably
or is it?
Creepy.
But I feel like it happens enough to be like, there's something in our brains that I just want to know the answers. Because why would anybody do that? Why would you? It's in movie theaters. It's at public transportation. Why would anybody sit next to somebody if they didn't have the option?
Yeah, I don't know. But maybe it's evolutionary for some folks. Like they really need to feel close to the tribe or something like that.
Right.
But I think the opposite. If I want to sit away far, far away from people, far away. Yeah. But maybe they do just want, you know, those folks that like to just put their thigh right on your thigh, like barely touching. Maybe it's those people. Like they just want, well, you're
you know what? You got me thinking. You don't want to know what the worst is?
Oh, more.
Is go to a salsa club because, you know, I'm the Latina in the room. And go to a salsa club and some guy will ask you to dance and then they'll want to dance salsa, but they use it as a sneaky way to try to grind all on you while dancing. That's what you just gave me flashbacks of that.
Yeah.
I have flashbacks.
You have flashbacks.
Flashbacks.
You turned into like every Chicago aunt.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I got the flashbacks of that day of salsa.
Oh my God, I went to a salsa club, somebody, and you won't believe what happened to me.
This very attractive man grinded me at this salsa club.
I kind of
flashbacks.
I didn't like it, but I did.
You almost turned into Linda Belcher.
It's the most action I've had in months. It's upsetting.
This is turning in from the worst to the best.
312-981-7200. All right, let's take a break. We'll wrap it up here after the break. It's the worst. It's the worst here on the download. 312-981-7200. The worst is when you get text message from someone that says, "Hey, what's going on?" Before you can respond to that text, they call you and ask the same question.
Yeah, that's brutal.
That's brutal.
It turns out I found out today I don't like talking to humans. I just like texting.
Of course.
A millennial I am.
But it's one of the best inventions in the history of the world.
Oh, it's so great.
Texting.
Yeah, it is. And I love an emoji. I really do. This is the record. For the record, WGN.
You love an emoji.
I love a good emoji.
I can vouch for her. I get a lot of them from her. No words, just a lot of emojis.
It's like you figure it out, Sully.
It's like modern day hieroglyphics.
All right, here's a long one.
I'm so 214. Excited.
The worst is when you call a big company's customer care center, national or international, and in order to keep track of your own case, you ask for the name, and they say Steven. And they say, what's the initial? And they apologize, but for security purposes, we can only give a first name. So you call back a couple days later to follow up on your case, and you ask for Steven. They say, which Steven?
Oh, no.
What?
That would be the worst.
It would be the worst.
I said, Steven, give me a last name. And then we wouldn't give it. So I don't know which Steven.
I don't know. It's somebody's Evans.
Oh, that would kill me.
Oh, man.
And imagine how long he waited on hold to get to a Steven. We have the 1,000 Stevens.
That HBO villain's back again.
He's back. See, we got him on the care. We got him in the customer service and the HBO. 773, the worst is having to choose between defending Donald Trump or the Cincinnati mom letting kid fall into a gorilla pit. Neither is either.
Yeah.
Or you don't have to defend either.
You don't have to do it. Yeah.
I don't know why you have to be involved. You have no skin in the game on either of these.
Maybe stop reading Facebook all day. That's my advice.
It's good advice, Kelsey.
Thank you.
It's great.
Similar to your worst, 847, I was playing piano for my first grader's annual show. As the show ended, I stood up quickly from the bench to get out of the parents' way so they could snap some photos. The parent behind me pushed me back down onto the bench so I was out of their way.
Wow.
See, they got physical.
You had That's intense.
That is.
That's crazy.
Have you ever gotten physical with somebody when they've annoyed you? Justin, I'm looking at you.
No.
She knows the answer is a yes for me.
You're more of a
fighter with the tongue. Yeah. Yikes.
I'm more of like the physical I get would be more like a Mike Ditka when he's mad at somebody on his team and they walk by and he kind of accidentally chest shoulder them.
No, that's physical violence. Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
You got the hands down. You're just like,
I thought you just meant turning red and almost collapsing. That's what I thought you meant by the dick away.
Come on, eat this pork chop.
You're like, why is he sweaty? His veins are so big. Because that's intimidating as well.
All right.
So what you're saying is you've used your shoulder to beat people.
70, exactly.
Somehow that makes it
I don't
better.
Feel like I've gotten any sort of physical anything. And
I'm going to start taking like notes. Work for me.
Oh, man. I have to think about that. I'll get back to you, Kelsey. Okay. I don't.
Well, you know what? Text me. Don't I'll call me.
Just use emojis. Don't even send her words.
Just a mustache and a punch. And I'll know. Oh, he dick us somebody.
Oh, he dick. He did dick us somebody. The reason the person sitting next to you on the bus or wherever they are is it's a compliment.
Oh, this idiot. Oh,
that's the one that's sitting next to
you know
me
what?
On the bus.
That guy's also like, smile more, whatever.
Yeah. Oh, you should smile. Yeah. Okay.
It's a compliment.
Yeah, whatever.
Just rubbing thighs, not a compliment, sir. Or madam, you could be.
It's probably just the one at the salsa club I was talking about.
That's right.
Grinding on.
Oh, goodness.
269 getting the giggles at a funeral.
Oh, yeah.
815 says the worst is the Chipotle person saying that guac is extra.
They want the proper word, guacamole, guacamole.
Is that what they mean? Like, you think they're mad that it's saying guac? Guac is extra?
Say guacamole.
I think they're like, I'm not paying for this.
If you can't finish the word, I'm not going to give you all my money.
Oh, I just love that they're mad that someone's doing their job.
I know, right? All right, I think we got it. We got the three, so let's get to it. I'm excited to read the prize list. Okay, so number one is going to be a pair of tickets to The Producers, now playing through June 26th at Mercury Theater Chicago, featuring a riotous mix of eccentric characters and show-stopping songs. The Producers is a spoof on the big old-fashioned Broadway musical. Get tickets by calling 773-325-1700 or go online to mercurytheaterchicago.com. Second and third are going to get the Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home in Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations and order online at loumalnati's.com. That's pretty good,
Wasn't that radio voice? Wow,
it's very Price is Right, kind
of. It was like he transformed right in front of
right
us.
Right in front of him. All right, third place. Johnson, the worst is when you have someone next to you in a store has Bluetooth on and you answer them and they weren't even talking to you.
It's a good one. So what does Johnson
That's a
win?
Good one. Johnson wins a pizza.
All right.
Lieutenant All right. O'Hara.
Yeah, right. That's kind of why we picked it, because of the fun bits that came after it.
You know who won? Everyone.
Everybody wins in that situation.
We're going to all go for the...
Yeah, we're coming over.
Yeah.
All right, second place is a 262. The worst is when you get a text message from someone that says, hey, what's going on? Before you can respond, they call you and ask the same question.
Yeah.
That's the worst.
That is the worst.
That's 262. So thanks, 262. You're going to get a pizza. And number one, are we ready, you guys?
I'm so
number
soaked.
One on the line, Joy, a repeat winner, Joy.
What?
Hey, thank you.
So,
thank
Joy, you. Yours was the free samples from the woman who was just giving herself a foot massage.
Some hummus toe jelly.
With the little plastic gloves on.
It's okay. Mm. The gloves are on. I don't think you understand how gloves work.
And just for, it was either Soli or Kelsey had said about the person sitting next to him. That was my text also saying.
Oh, there you go. See?
It's a compliment because they're choosing you as opposed to not wanting to sit in an empty seat and have somebody creepier than them sit next to them.
Oh, I see. There you go, Joy.
You had logic. We just thought you were being sexist, Joy. Thank you for correcting us.
Yeah. We just thought it was a guy going, take it as a compliment.
Yeah.
So and you know great. What? There's something wonderful about the phrase you just used, fun bits. I don't know what that was, but it cracked me up.
All right, Joy, you get a new saying, fun bits, and you get tickets to The Producers. Joy, thanks for playing.
Thanks, Joy.
All right, I want to thank Soli Santos, who will be at Simone's next Wednesday night in Pilsen. She's also newest member of the Cates Ensemble. Good to be here, and a regular here at the Downloads The Worst. Thanks for being here. Kelsey Huff, of course, the creator of the Cates. The dun, major dun, dun. Creator, managing creator. Their birthday show is going to be at the Diversity Rockin' Bowl on July 7th, and she will be at the bookseller this Friday night with the Cates. Kelsey, Soli, great to see you. Thanks for being here.
So fun.
So
thanks,
fun
guys.
Tonight.
Thanks,
thank
Pete.
You so much.
Bye.
That's going to do it tonight for the Download. Pete Zimmerman. Thanks to everybody who called tonight. Unbelievable night. I mean, there's so many texts for the worst. So great. Tomorrow night we will be back. We're going to play Picnic. We're going to pick a star, too, for the Cubs. We have to, right? It's time to get at one of the big dogs. I'm thinking one of the top pitchers or maybe one of the corner guys. I was thinking Soler, but he got hurt, so we got to pick. Maybe we go with Chris Bryant. What do you think? What do you think, Pete?
Yeah, let's do it. It's better. His nickname on the back of his sweatsuit was KB.
We can do better. Tomorrow night, Chris Bryant is our choice for Picnic. Also, Deputy Mayor Andrea Zopp will be here, and we'll have so much more.